is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins. Touchdown, Buffalo. McCoy. Touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
I look forward to the 2017 football season so we can update some of those play calls, Donald. You know what I mean? We've heard them. They're good. They're all solid calls.
We need some new ones.
We need some new ones. We need touchdowns. Zay Lewis.
I don't think your voice would be that low, though. Your voice usually goes up high when there's a touchdown.
Yeah. Touchdown! Zay Jones. Why did I call him Zay Lewis? Touchdown! Zay Jones! Touchdown! Who would be the most fun guy to call touchdown from on the current roster?
On the current roster?
The new guys.
I think
Zay Jones, Tre'Davious White. What did you call Tre'Davious the other day?
Trey Day.
I can see that working.
Yeah.
Are you calling him that or anybody else?
I think I am, but I think I'm going to have to talk to him about that and see if we can.
We'll run that by him.
Yeah, get some shirts made, and that'll be his nickname.
And I'm still not sure where we are with T-Mobile. Is T-Mobile cool or?
I think so. You know, I've heard other people call him T-Mobile.
But he gave conflicting signals, remember?
Really? I mean, really?
First he told me, yeah, no, not really. And then he went on NFL Network this past offseason and said, yeah, T-Mobile, I like that nickname. Yeah. I know. I don't know. That's why he doesn't come on the show. Welcome to the show, the big show, the John Murphy Show, presented by...
Any other nicknames on the team that you've given guys?
I got to start. That's what I'll do when I'm off for a couple weeks. Dream up nicknames for some of these folks.
I know Mr. Big Stuff.
Mr. Big Stuff. That's not me. He's self-glossed with Mr. Big Stuff.
Well, you made up another one. That was you, but, you know.
Huh?
We'll leave that alone.
Which one? Oh, for Marcel? Rashad Ross, there's something there we can work with. DeKeel Shorts.
Oh, yeah. We can find something with that.
Yeah. Man. We should come up with, like, really stupid nicknames for some guys, you know?
We should.
I'll do this. This will keep me busy.
This should be your homework over?
Yeah. Andre Holmes takes it to the house. Oh, Holmes, house?
Yeah.
Nothing?
I think we can make something up.
We're going to make something up when I'm gone, and I'll be gone
after this week.
Yeah. All the way home. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on a rainy day in Orchard Park. That's okay. We'll get through it today, and we have the show to do for the next 3 hours. And as usual, you are welcome to join us. A lot of focus today on Bills history. Why are we doing that? Well, we've done it the last couple of weeks, and it seems to work pretty well. We've done it in conjunction with the series of shows coming up on MSG. Now, the series, I hope you've been able to see them so far, the Bills' top 10 lists. There have been two so far. They air Monday night at 9 o'clock. They started with the top 10 moments in Bills history. It went last Monday to the top 10 offensive performers. And now this coming Monday, the top 10 defensive performers in Buffalo Bills history. It's going to be on MSG on TV, 9 o'clock on Monday. They play it a lot during the week. And we're going to focus on that on the show today. Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with Mike Adamek, the producer of all of these shows. We'll talk to him about this week's show, Top 10 Defensive Performers. Coming up after that, around 1:30, Fred Smirlus. Certainly you would think he would be regarded as one of the top 10 defensive performers in franchise history. We'll talk with Fred about that. Coming up at 2, our buddy Marlon Kerner is going to join us. Marlon is the Bills' Director of Player Engagement. He was the man who put together the schedule and the itinerary, the agenda, really, for the Bills' rookie development program, which just wrapped up yesterday. We want to talk to Marlon about how it went, what they talked to those guys about, right?
Yeah, I think we need to let fans understand the support that the players get, and that's for rookies. I think Marlon wants to really vamp that support up, for at least for this team, for veterans as well, though. You know, and I think that's something that falls by the wayside. Is now there is support league-wide, but you know, he wants to do a lot more here in Buffalo for the veterans, because you have this program for the rookies, and then after that, it's like you're kind of on your own, you know, and you have to seek everything out yourself. So I think he wants to vamp things up for veterans. We'll talk to him about it.
Yeah, we'll talk with him about that at 2 o'clock today. In the meantime, we'll talk with you. And the phone lines are open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or you can join us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We're going to focus on this top 10 defensive performers in franchise history. The list, official as it can be, comes out Monday on the 9 o'clock show, Top 10 Moments on MSG. But let's debate a little bit, and let's debate it from this standpoint. You guys did this last Friday when I was in here for the offensive performers. Mm-hmm. Top 10 defensive players in Bills history airs Monday on MSG. This is our Twitter poll. Which current defensive player on the Buffalo roster has a chance to someday be ranked in the top 10 in franchise history? Current player, Bills roster, who someday down the road, people will look back and say, boom, he was one of the top 10 defensive players in franchise history, whether it's 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road. Who do you think it'll be? You know, some of us think there's a pretty fair collection of defensive talent on this roster right now. Certainly they've underperformed for the last few years. But who would you go to, Donald, as the guy who really is going to be up there as one of the top 10 defensive performers in franchise history? What would you think on the roster now?
On the roster now, I think obviously Kyle Williams is going to come to mind. I think he's a guy who has performed very well throughout his career. He's been consistent, and that's not just on game days. That's even in practice. He's very consistent in everything that he does, and he's really just been a model citizen, you know. So I think when you – and we get so caught up in stats and things, but when you look at the people, like who they are as people, what they do in the community – you know, that kind of goes into this as well. I think Kyle would be – I think Marcel has a chance if he can, you know, stay on the field and be as productive as we know he can be. He would be a guy who would be in consideration. If Marcel is playing like Marcel, he's one of the best in the league.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to wreak havoc. And if he can do that consistently year after year after year, then, yeah, he'll be one of the best in franchise history. Marcel Darius has the ability to be – the best defensive player in franchise history. He just has to put it all together year after, like week after week, year after year, you know?
Yeah, I do know. And it's a common theme on our show. We talk about it almost on a daily basis. Marcel Darius has as much ability as anybody who's ever been on the roster when it comes to defensive players. And he's got two Pro Bowls to show for it, none in the last couple of years. And we've talked about how he is the most important guy on the roster. I believe he is this year anyway, both for him and for the future and the immediate success of the franchise. If he puts it together, and he's still very young, if he puts it together and starts to play the way many of us think he can, then sure, he could be a top 10 player in franchise history. Not there yet, not by a long shot. I mean, if Marcel Darius, if you're writing the story of his career to date, you would say there was a flash there, a couple-year flash, but really unfulfilled expectations would be the headline on his career. But he has a chance to change all that, to turn that all around. As you know, the guy is still pretty young. He's just 26 years old.
Is he 26, 27?
Yep.
He's 27.
So he's got time to play, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, maybe longer. But who do you think? If you're out there, you can vote in our Twitter poll. The top 10 defensive players in Bills history airs Monday night, 9 o'clock on MSG. Which current defensive player has a chance to be ranked in the top 10 in team history? Right now, early on in the Twitter poll, two-thirds of you think Kyle Williams, with his 4 Pro Bowl appearances, with his record of longevity, with his reputation well-earned as a good teammate and a team guy. Two-thirds of you, 67%, say Kyle is the guy who has a chance to be ranked top 10 in franchise history. 17% of you say Marcel Darius, the guy we just talked about. 10% say Jerry Hughes, which is interesting. Hughes has had a down year or two, coming off a couple of good years. And 6% say somebody else. What do you think? Top 10 defensive players in Bills history. Which current defensive player has a chance to be ranked top 10 in team history? Give us a call. Lines are open. 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it on Twitter. Vote in our Twitter poll or respond via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Yeah, Kyle Williams, I think, would be, and it already with 1,000 votes in, already you can see that the vote is swinging his way for good reason. He's earned that, you know, with his years in the league, with his consistent level of play. He seems to be over the nagging injuries that hampered him a couple of years ago with the foot problems. He seems to be over that, and now going into his 12th year, Kyle Williams is, you would think, entering into the final stages of his career. 4 Pro Bowls in the books. Again, I don't think anyone anticipates a big drop off in his play. I'm anticipating that maybe he is part of more of a rotation on the defensive line than he has been in the past. But certainly, there has to be at least a year or two left of effectively for Kyle Williams. And I would think, yeah, someday, maybe even Monday, when the list comes out, he would be regarded as one of the top 10 defensive players in franchise history. What
I
do you think?
I think he should be on the list already, just with everything that he's done on the field. I mean, this dude has been so consistent every year. I mean, he's had some injuries, but for the most part, when Kyle, you're not talking about a guy who's injured year after year. You're talking about a guy who 12 years in, you're going to have some injuries, right? Kyle has been on the field consistent, like you said, 4 Pro Bowls, but he's just a guy who, you know, you don't expect him, because of his size and everything, you don't expect him to be able to do what he does. And Kyle is a beast out there, man. Like, he comes through for this team, like, every game, you know? And it's like, man, if he's not making a play, he's in the backfield, he's somewhere around the play. You know, he's just so good. But I still would have to go with Marcel. I understand why the vote right now is swinging or has swung Kyle's way, but I think Marcel, with what he's done and potentially can be the number one player in franchise history if he can put it all together.
What about Jerry Hughes on that list, getting some support, about 10%? What do you think of that?
I think Jerry Hughes has ability too. That dude is quick off the edge. You know, he has, and I think in this defense, if you can keep, number one, this coaching staff here, and you can keep Jerry here in this type of defense in a 4-3, he can wreak havoc. You know, with Shaq on the other side, if Shaq can emerge and be good, and you have bookends, man, I think Jerry can really take over games, because he is that good. He is that talented. He hasn't been able to show it the last couple of years in a 3-4 scheme, but I think getting back into this 4-3 scheme with Shaq on the other side, it will help out Jerry, and you'll see Jerry make a lot of plays.
Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter. Top 10 defensive players in history on the current roster. Who has a chance to be on that? Or maybe you got somebody else in mind. A couple of tweets already in on this. Jesse Edmondson, Shaq Lawson, followed Shaq at Clemson. He was great at 75% health. Now at 100%, has a chance to become great. We'll see. I mean, I don't think there's enough evidence yet about Shaq Lawson. Certainly his 10 games last year, there were some good flashes, but I would be hard-pressed to say that, he merits any consideration for top 10 just yet.
Yeah.
Eric Switzer tweets in, I accidentally hit Jerry Hughes. Let the record show I want to vote for Kyle. All right, we will let the record show.
You know, I think another guy who we just don't know about yet, I mean, we know about him because he's been productive in this league, but not here for this franchise. And I think he still has a lot left in the tank. Micah Hyde, you know, the safety. He's a guy who's so versatile. I think they're going to ask him to do so many different things in this defense. And if he's healthy, he's going to come down. He's going to cover receivers. He's going to cover tight ends. He's going to play the back end. He's going to come down and help out in the run game. He's going to do so much for this franchise. I think if he's here long enough, he'll be a guy who you'd be like, man, that dude was good. He should be in the top 10.
Let's see him play. I want to see him play. Let us know what you think. Current defensive player on the Buffalo roster who has a chance to be top 10 all time. Spence tweets in, definitely agree with you about Darius. He looks like a man among boys when he's focused. Just has to be focused consistently. Yeah, I agree. That's what they're looking for from him this year. Hopefully they get that from him this year. Here's a call from Mark. Mark, go ahead. You're on there. Anyone on the current roster, Mark, who do you think could be in the top 10 in franchise history, defensive player?
Well, they probably all could be on the top 10. I just don't see it. I don't think Darius has the push to be that. I mean, he could be great. I don't see it. But
Kyle Williams, Mark?
Well, yeah, I would give Kyle Williams. I think he's been a warrior, and he's been a true Buffalo Bills fan. Or as a player, you know, he came out that time and said, hey, if you don't want to be in Buffalo, we don't want you here. I do like Kyle Williams. What's going to hurt Kyle Williams is they haven't won. They haven't made the playoffs in 17 years. And the number one on the list is simple and easy. Bruce Smith is the number one defensive player to ever play here in Buffalo. I'm away, I'm dinging, but have a good day, gentlemen.
Okay, thanks.
Thank
you. Yeah, number one on the all-time defensive players, I agree with you, Bruce is. And I don't know, Donald, I think listen, if Marcel Darius can supplant Bruce Smith as the best defensive player in franchise history, I'll be stunned.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce Smith is a record-setting, you know, all-time sack leader. I don't know that Marcel – even if Marcel plugs in – gets his, you know, gets consistent as we talked about, and gets ready to play. I don't know if he'd ever catch Bruce Smith as the best player in defense.
Well,
best defensive player in history.
It's not an easy thing to do because Bruce was so good. But I do think that Marcel, he would be number two, at least behind Bruce. He does have that ability to be right up there in the conversation. Now, you talk about sacks. You talk about so many different things that Bruce did out there. You're talking Bruce Smith is, you know, arguably, some people say, the best defensive player in the history of the game, you know. So you just don't know. I don't know if Marcel will be that, but I think he would be up there in the conversation. I think he has the ability. He has to put it all together, though.
You think – I don't know if Bruce is the number one defensive player in the game.
I've heard people make that argument.
Really?
Yeah.
Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White.
Yeah, there's a lot. That's what I'm saying. It's a debate there. It's a healthy debate.
Yeah, I'd debate that. And Bruce is great and, you know, maybe the greatest player in franchise history, but I don't know about NFL history. It's a good debate. We hope you can join in. 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-552-550. On the current Bills roster, who merits some consideration for the top 10 franchise all time? The top 10 defensive players show will air Monday night, 9 o'clock on MSG. We hope you've enjoyed that series so far, and it will continue. We'll talk about that a little bit later on when Fred Smirlis joins us in the 1 o'clock hour, and the producer of that series, Mike Adamek, is going to join us as well. But which current Bills defensive player has a chance to be ranked top 10 in franchise history? We don't know about some of the young guys, guys who've never taken an NFL snap in particular, right. Tre'Davious White. All reports are, all indications are, he's going to be a pretty good player. It'd be impossible to predict that he would somehow be a great player in franchise history. And, you know, Ronald Darby, a couple of years in, I think has had some good moments, especially 2 years ago. I think I'd be asking a lot to think that he would emerge. I mean, there's some good defensive players in this franchise history. I don't know that Ronald Darby could jump up into that group. I don't think so.
For this Twitter poll, I think you need to have, like, some evidence in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you need to be able to go back and say, okay, this is what he did so I can see that potential. This is what he did at least in one season in the NFL so I can see that potential. But it's hard to actually predict the future. But when you just go off of talent, talent-wise, Ronald Darby is a good corner. You know, he can do a lot of different things talent-wise, but he probably needs to be in the right system. I don't think what they were asking them to do last year, the cornerbacks, really fit what those two cornerbacks do. And we'll see if he fits into this system well, from all indications that he's looked very good out there. You know, so we'll see how he looks come Sunday or September Sundays. I think talent-wise, he has the potential to be one of those guys. I think he does. I think, well, like I said, Micah Hyde, Marcel. I think Marcel does. I think, who else? I mean, Jerry, when you talk about talent-wise, Jerry can be one of those guys. But Jerry is another guy who has to put it all together. You know, he sometimes has crazy penalties. The last couple of years, he wasn't, I guess, happy in the defense. And so it seemed like sometimes even – you know, just was disinterested out there on the field, you know. So guys that end up on these types of lists, it doesn't matter what defense you're in. It really doesn't matter. They just take over games. It doesn't matter who your head coach is. Like, none of that stuff matters. I'm out here to play football, and I'm going to take over the game regardless of what happens. So you need to be able to put it together year after year after year. Coaches change. Systems change. But you have to be able to adapt and still be good. And that's why we say Kyle – probably, in my opinion, should already be on this list, because he's been so good, even though all of these coaches have changed, even though all of these systems have changed. He's gone from a 4-3 to a 3-4, back to a 4-3, been asked to do so many different things, but he's still that guy that's consistent every year.
803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550, or via Twitter. Top 10 defensive players in franchise history airs Monday night. Who on the current roster might someday be on that list? Not now, maybe now. Maybe Kyle Williams now, maybe Marcel Darius now, but someday, you know, 5-10 years mm-hmm. from now, who on the current roster would be on that list? A couple of tweets on this. Garen tweets in, "Are you kidding me with this question? No brainer."
We knew that was going to come in.
On the current roster? So you think, so what's the no brainer? Kyle is the only one? I don't understand.
Yeah, I think you're saying Kyle's the only one.
Am I being dumb here?
No, but we knew something, you know, somebody was going to say something like that.
Yeah, I knew that answer.
On Twitter. But yeah, I mean, right now, when you just look at production and guys on this roster, Kyle is the one guy that has produced the most on this roster for like year in and year out.
12 years, 11 years.
Right, exactly.
Here's a tweet. Chris Pearson, "Would you guys consider Stephon Gilmore in the lower top 10 of best defensive players all time?" No. In franchise history, absolutely not.
No.
No. He had some good solid years. No, never made it to a Pro Bowl, Gilmore.
Just this year he made it.
This year.
Yeah, he played in the Pro Bowl.
All right.
He was an alternate, and then he ended up getting in.
Oh, yeah.
He played. But, you know, for a cornerback, you're kind of measured in interceptions, you know. And I mean, you can lock guys up, and ultimately, if you're a guy who's locking guys up, they don't throw it your way that often. But when they do throw it your way, you got to be able to pick it off, you know. Now, Stephon had a good season last year, but he has to do that a couple more seasons to be up there in consideration for
MVP
that.
Tweets in, there's no way Donald Jones thinks Darius could overtake Bruce as number one ever. He'd have to be considered the number one defensive tackle in NFL ever. Bruce was a defensive end. But you don't think Darius could be the best defensive player in franchise history?
I think he could be up there in conversation. I don't know if he would, you know, overtake that, but he can be up there in conversation. If he can put it together for, let's just say, 5 years in a row where he's actually the best defensive tackle in the game today, if he was the best defensive tackle in the game 5 years in a row, then people would say, man, this dude is, you know, he's up there as one of the top two best defensive players in this franchise's history.
Yeah. Here's a tweet. Christopher Kujewski, does a guy like London Fletcher make the list of top 10 defensive players all time?
I thought about him.
You think he – a lot of tackles on bad defenses. How long is he here? I don't know. I'm guessing 4, 5, 6 years maybe. Yeah. I'd have to look it up. A lot of tackles on defenses that were not that good. Mm-hmm. We'll ask Mike Adamek about that when he gets out there, where London Fletcher fit into the picture, where, if at all, he fits into the picture. He might be on that top 10 list. He wouldn't get my vote for that. I think he had
top 10.
Yeah, I think he had, you know, meaningless tackles a lot. You know, I don't think he was an impact player. That's just me, though.
Yeah.
803-0550, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Or via Twitter, top 10 defensive players in Bills history. The TV show airs Monday night. Anybody on the current roster merits some consideration for that. Bill calling from Buffalo. Bill, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Donald. I love you, man. And I'm usually, like, right there with you, but my God, you got to be kidding me. Bruce Smith and Marcell Dareus, you can't – they're not even in the same league. I mean, Bruce Smith, first of all, was driven to be awesome, to be great. And I don't think Marcell Dareus is driven to be anything. He doesn't really give a crap that much.
Hmm.
There's no comparing them. And as far as the top 10, I mean, none of these Bills are top 10 defensive guys. You got to be kidding me.
Kyle Williams?
I could name about seven guys off of the teams from the 90s that should be in the top 10. I mean, there's no room for these guys. They're just maybe Marcell Dareus ninth or 10th or something.
Kyle Williams?
I love Kyle Williams. He's a great player, great motor, overachiever. Top 10, we've had some pretty good defensive players. I mean, just to look at the history of the Bills, even though we haven't been the greatest teams on the face of the earth, we've had some pretty good defensive players. And
so, Bill, you said you can name seven guys off the Bills of the 90s who would be top 10. Can you rattle off some of those names? I mean, Bruce, obviously. Who else?
Bills from the 90s, I would have to say Daryl Talley, Cornelius Bennett. Let's see, who else do we got there? Missing somebody.
Yeah, well, you're up to three, and that's a long way from seven. But beyond that, I mean, I could think, you know, Shane Conlon, I think, would deserve some consideration as a top 10 all time. Some. I wouldn't put him in there, but some consideration. Anybody else? Anybody we're missing?
Maybe four or five, but the point of the matter is there's a ton of guys, and I just don't think that, you know, it's an insult to Bruce Smith to say that that Marcell Dareus is even in the same – you can mention him in the same breath as Bruce Smith.
Well, again, and to be – precise about it, what we're talking about is players on the current roster who have a chance to be among the top 10 in franchise history. Nobody here said, you know, Marcell Dareus is better than Bruce Smith, right? That's not what you're saying.
Well, what I'm saying, first of all, they play two totally different positions,
mm-hmm.
right? So Marcell is a defensive tackle who was eating up double teams on the inside. Bruce Smith played defensive end, so he was coming off the edge and sacking quarterbacks. So it's two totally different positions.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have different production. So if Marcell Dareus, let's just say throughout his entire career, he was locked in every single year, he would be talked about as a top two defensive player in this franchise's history. But he's not going to have the same amount of sacks because he's a defensive tackle. He's not going to have the same amount of tackles because he's a defensive tackle, and he's eating up double teams on the inside. So we're talking about two different players. So, you know, first of all, I'm always going to defend Marcell. He's my guy. So.
Yeah, and the one thing that the caller Bill said, and I get it, you know, Marcell's had a rough couple of years, I'm not ready to close the book on Marcell Dareus. Some people are. I get it. But for Bill and others to think or to say he'll never get it, he's done, I'm not ready. I'm not there. I could be proven wrong. Marcell might prove us wrong. I'd be severely disappointed. But with the great talent that he has and with what I think is a pretty good heart, if he pulls himself together, which he seems to be in the process of doing, I'm eager to see what Marcell Dareus has to offer this team. So some people may, you know, be ready to close the book on Marcell Dareus and say he'll never do this, he'll never do that. I'm not there yet. I'm really not.
Marcell is, yeah, a lot of people are, they want to close the book on him. But I think he just plays a totally different position.
He has
to do different things than a defensive end. Defensive ends, they rush the quarterback and they get sacks. And so they are the guys on the outside that everybody talks about. You know, and you're going to get all of the – it's just like the offensive line. Offensive tackles are the ones that get all the shine because they have to block those defensive ends. But defensive tackles do a lot of work on the inside, and Marcell is a guy who can get into the backfield and get sacks. He is a guy who can disrupt the running game in the backfield. He's always on the other side if he's locked in and 100% healthy.
On Marcell, Frederick Gundell tweets, in 5 years, are you kidding? Marcell does not play 5 games in a row. Bruce was not an off-the-field problem like Marcell. Frederick, I advise you to take a look back. Bruce missed time. Bruce had a suspension, missed part of a season. Bruce missed time, holdouts and issues, a couple of off-the-field issues. In that regard, I think they're fairly similar, Marcell Dareus and Bruce Smith. Bruce obviously has outperformed by a wide margin what Marcell did. Donald's pointed out at great lengths about the difference in position. But take a look. You know, Bruce missed time because of off-field issues. Shay Lambert tweets in, what about Aaron Schobel, the silent assassin? He's got to be in the top 10. Maybe he does. That show comes out on Monday. We're talking about current players on the roster. You were around Schobel a little bit.
A little bit. He was a sack machine. He definitely was a sack machine.
Right.
But I don't know if he'll make the top 10. It's just like the guy said, there's a lot of good defensive players in this franchise's history. We were talking about because I was – you know, more like the end of his career. So you're talking about a guy early in his career, you and somebody in the office said that he came in kind of like spurts.
The sacks came, you know, in bunches kind of.
Yeah.
But he could have played more. He kind of pulled the plug early, I thought, in his career. I don't think he was fading or anything at the end of his career. Call here from John in Niagara Falls. Hello, John. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Sure.
I think when Marcell Dareus stays on the field and plays to his potential, I see him as better career-wise than Warren Sapp. He had far more sack production when he was playing than Sapp early on, and he's bigger and stronger. And I think we're looking at our own Warren Sapp, frankly.
Warren Sapp is in the Hall of Fame, right? Or going in the Hall of Fame. What do you think of that? At least the same position.
Yeah. I think I'd have to agree. I think Marcell is talented. He's talented enough to be a Hall of Famer. He's talented enough to be considered one of the best defensive tackles to ever play the game if he can lock it in and do it year after year.
Okay. We're talking about the Bills' all-time defenders. It is the MSG show next Monday, 9 o'clock on MSG. Top 10 defensive players all-time in franchise history. In particular, we want to talk with you and ask you if there's anybody on the current roster who someday might be considered one of the top defensive players in franchise history. Lots of time to talk. Lots of phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. We're just getting started at One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back. It's Friday afternoon at One Bills Drive. Players are gone. Donald and I are here, and you are welcome to join us at 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-552-550. On Monday, 9 o'clock on MSG, it is the third installment of our Bills Top 10 series. The top 10 defensive players will be announced Monday night, 9 o'clock. And we've kind of taken that and extended it to the current Bills roster. Who do you think on the current Buffalo roster would have a chance to be top 10 defensive player in franchise history? That's our Twitter poll. We've got pretty good response to this so far on Twitter. So the show goes up on Monday, top 10 defensive players in history. On the current Buffalo roster, who do you think would have a chance to be a top 10 defensive player? Which current Bills defensive player has a chance? Right now, we've got about 1,500 votes in, and two-thirds of you think Kyle Williams has a pretty good chance. I can't agree. I can't disagree with that. 17% of you, and this is, he's kind of the flashpoint here, Marcel Darius, Donald. 10% say Jerry Hughes. 6% say somebody else. I'm intrigued, even though, you know, we knew Kyle would get most votes here, but I'm intrigued by the people and the debate about Marcel Darius. I think most people acknowledge that Marcel is, you know, tremendously talented and also tremendously disappointing in the way he's played in the last couple of years. We're all kind of at age, what do we say he is, 27?
Yep.
All kind of waiting to see which way his career goes, which is why he's worthy of debate, I think, on this show, and worthy of debate when you talk about potential top 10 players in Bills history.
He is the most important person on his defense. You've said it.
I've said it on the team, I think.
On the team, right. Yeah. He is the most, and on the defensive side of the ball, he is the most important. If he's out there, it makes everybody else better. So if you have a guy like that, who makes everybody else better on your defense, and he can plug it in, he can lock it in for 5 years in a row, you'd be talking about, man, this dude was good, you know. But he just plays a different position where he's the one that's going to eat up double teams, you know. But he has to be – he still has to make plays, you know. He still has to be disruptive in the backfield and all that stuff. But when he's on the field, defenses know where Marcel Darius is. As good as Kyle is, as good as Jerry is, as good as we hope, you know, Shaq will be, defenses will know where Marcel Darius is, and they will game plan for him.
He had 10 sacks in 2014, 7.5 the year before that, just 3.5 last year and 2 the year before that. But you're not going to measure Marcel Darius' effectiveness in sacks, are you?
No, you're not.
You're going to probably look at where do the Bills stand as far as run defense at the end of the year, I would think, right?
I would think so. I mean, defensive tackles – you don't expect them to be in double digits in sacks year after year. I mean, that's kind of rare. You know, you have to look at run defense and how he's plugging up that hole. And I think that's, you know, that's where you have to measure him. And I think if he's on the field next to Kyle, if Kyle is – now, Kyle is going to have a good year. I mean, he's had good years without Marcel really being Marcel. But at the same time, if Marcel is on the field and locked in, Kyle can have a breakout season. Jerry can have a breakout season. So when you look at everybody else and everybody else is having crazy seasons, a lot of the times if Marcel is playing like Marcel, it's because he's so effective inside and they have to double team him. They will not leave Marcel Darius one-on-one with a guard or a center. Usually it's somebody chipping him from, you know, you have a guard on him and the center is chipping and going up to the next level or vice versa. They will not leave that kid one-on-one.
Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Top 10 defensive players in Bills history. Anybody on the current roster got a chance to be that guy? Let us know what you think. Let's take a couple of calls here. We'll go to John in North Tonawanda. Hi, John. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I think Kyle's the only one, really. Darius, I mean, everybody looks at him the same way. Tremendous talent. I think he owes us about 3 seasons, though. I mean, really, and himself, actually, and a huge contract if he can do it. But the next 3 seasons, he could definitely jump on the list right now. I wouldn't put him there. You know, I think we're forgetting some of the early championship, the 60s championship guys. And maybe next week we might see, like, Sestak and Bird and Butch Bird and Mike Stratton in the 90s. I like Bill Hansen maybe for that list. Way back, George Sames. Fred Smirlis, I think, might be considered too. Cornelius, of course. Talley, I bet he'll be in the discussion.
Yeah.
So that kind of pushes Kyle right down, I think, to the precipice, whether he's going to be in the top 10 or not. Those names will push him there, but I don't see Darius. It's too early for him.
Yeah, I got you, and that's a good point, John, and I like the way you phrase it. You know, he has a chance, and that's, I think, what we're saying.
Yeah.
He has a chance to push Darius, we're talking about here, to push himself into the top 10, but not yet. And, you know, he has time to do it, too. He has time to do it as his age. But the clock is ticking. I mean, if he, you know, if something happens this year, if he doesn't have a good year, then you start to think, okay, you know, first of all, you start to think, is he going to be on the roster much longer?
Right,
second,
exactly.
You start to think, well, maybe he won't be one of the all-time greats.
How old is Kyle?
Kyle is he's 12 years in the league. I can look it up. I'm guessing he's 33, 34 at this point.
Yeah, so Marcel is 27. Kyle is still going strong at 33, 34.
Yep.
You know, so you have a guy in Marcel. If he can lock it in like Kyle has locked it in year after year, then he still has a lot of tread on those tires. He still can go, you know. And if he can do that, I think you know, fans would be happy, he would be happy, and his teammates would be happy as well.
803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Interesting tweet from L-Dog. Would you take Marcel over Pat Williams in the all-time defensive players? And he goes on to say, top three, Bruce, Tally, Bennett. I may put Spielman, Bryce Pop, and Conlon in the top 10, too. And I do want to get to a point. When Mike Adamek comes out next hour, you cannot ignore the AFL Bills, the 60 Bills, with all the great defensive talent they had. Richard Smith tweets in, Darius is the best defensive tackle right now, better than any other Bills defensive tackles in history. I would say no. I would say Sestak would be that guy, best defensive tackle in history. But his point about Marcel over Pat Williams, I wouldn't put either one of them in my top 10 right now. And, I would put Marcel slightly ahead of Pat Williams. Marcel's been to a couple of Pro Bowls. He had that 10-sack season, but that would be a close call, I think, because Pat Williams is very effective.
I didn't get to see Pat.
He was good. He was good. Yeah. I don't know if he was ever as dominant as Marcel Darius can be and has not been enough in his career.
In the 10-sack season that Marcel had at that point, wasn't really watching football too closely. How dominant was he?
Well, he was dominant, and it was a very good defense. This was the Jim Schwartz year. It was a very good defense, and he was dominant, but he was surrounded by guys who were also having big years too, which is fine.
Right.
And that's the way it's got to be. But, he was definitely – I mean, I think – I recall thinking this is the best interior defensive lineman in the league right now, Marcel Darius, and it's only three seasons ago, you know.
Right, and I think he's still – Marcel, talent-wise, is still in the prime of his career. He's still in – where he can get it going, and he needs to lock it in because he still is at the age of 27. He's still young, you know, and I think he seems like he's locking it in. He truly does, but we'll see. We won't know until we get to September, and you know, October and November and later into the season. Is he still playing the same way? But we'll see once we get there.
Call from Frank in Lancaster. Hello, Frank. Welcome. You're on the air with us. Top 10 defensive players. Anybody currently going to get on that top 10 defensive list someday, Frank?
Hi, Mr. Murphy. I would think that Kyle has a chance. Darius, maybe, but a long way to go. In reference to the upcoming program, I'm thinking Sestak also. And if they do a group rather than a single person, how about the Bermuda Triangle?
Yeah, I don't think they are doing groups, but I think there's a couple, you know, obviously Fred Smirlis, the anchor of that group, and Haslett and Shane Nelson at the linebacker spots. I think Haslett would have to be somewhere in the top 20 defensive players of all time, I would think, on the franchise history, don't you think, Frank?
Yes, I would think so. The players individually, in particular Smirlis and Haslett, were exceptional for their day and time and stuffing the run and everything else. So it's a good possibility they'll get on there.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks for calling. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. I'm taking a look here when you think about Haslett and Shane Nelson at the Bills' the Bills' 50th anniversary team, which I think gives you some direction. And this was a fan vote, 50th anniversary team, a couple of years ago. What was it? 2009, so more than a couple of years ago. But, a half million votes tabulated. Bruce Smith, here's the defense from the 50th anniversary team. Bruce Smith, Fred Smirlis, Tom Sestak, Daryl Talley, Mike Stratton, Cornelius Bennett, and Shane Conlon, Butch Bird, Nate Odoms, George Sames, and Henry Jones. So, no, Haslett did not make the 50th anniversary team, which is interesting to me. I think Haslett made the 25th anniversary team. If I recall, I don't have time to look that up. But I think that's a pretty good indication of the way the fans feel anyway. Here's Rusty in Hamburg. Rusty, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. We're talking about Pat Williams and these guys. What about Ted Washington?
Yeah.
He was like baby Washington in the day. Teddy was great.
He was great. He was immovable up front. Did you play with him?
No, he was long gone. Seen highlights.
Yeah.
Definitely seen highlights.
Immovable. I guess I would submit that he...
And I'm going to hang up. I got some work to do. But
okay, Rusty, get your work done. I would submit that Ted didn't have the longevity that he might need to be considered to be one of the all-time defensive greats. But certainly for a couple of years, Ted Washington was immovable and a dominant force up front. You've heard people talk about him, Don.
Yeah, I've definitely heard people talk. Marlon Kerner, who we're going to have on the show, has talked about, you know, Ted Washington. And he seems like he was... And the highlights that I've seen of him, it's like, man, this dude was... He was a beast. He was big.
He was big. He was strong.
Did we have him on the show?
We did. Didn't he have the Popeye's chicken
franchises
down
in
Florida, I believe?
Yeah, somewhere down south. Yeah, it's a big boy.
Two, three, four, five, 6 years with the Bills, longer than I
think. I
think
he was the leader of the charge this year for a game.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and he stood on the platform. That's
he stood on the platform. And I remember saying to myself, like, man, did they reinforce this platform? Is it wood? Is it steel? Because I stood next to him in the box before he went down to stand on the platform. I'm like, yo, this dude is huge.
He's big.
Yeah.
6 years with the Bills, and he missed one game in those 6 years.
Yeah.
All right. That's right. Ted Washington, that's longer than I thought. We're going to take a break. We got a lot more to come, including your thoughts on which current Bills might merit some consideration in the top defensive players of all time. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We are back live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones here until 3 today. Fred Smirlo is going to join us next hour. We're going to talk with the producer of that Bills Top 10 series, Mike Adamek, next hour as well. The focus today is on the all-time defensive players in franchise history. That's the show coming up on Monday night, 9 o'clock on MSG. Bills Top 10 defensive players all time. Today, who do you think on the current roster? This is what we're talking about, and you're welcome to join us. On the current roster, who might someday be on that top 10 defensive list for the Buffalo Bills? Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Jeff in Jamestown has a thought on this. Jeff, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, John. As far as the current roster, I think Jerry Hughes has a possibility. But I'd like to talk about Marcel Darius and Kyle Williams. Kyle Williams was a fourth-round draft pick, and he's played with a chip on his shoulder since the very day. He keeps in shape. That's why he's played as long as he has. And then you got Marcel Darius. Was he 6'3", 330? If he's 330, there's no way. He's at least 350, and he doesn't stay in shape. And that's how you get hamstring injuries and stuff like that. If he acted like Bruce Smith did after when he was in 1985, he was 305 pounds, and you saw in 87 he drastically changed his body type and he became a superstar. If he could just dial down and get to, you know, he would be as good possibly as like Mean Joe Green.
Well, a couple of things. Yeah. Kyle was a fifth round pick. What are you laughing about?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
But difference.
Well, here's a big difference. Marcel Darius doesn't want to be 295 pounds like Bruce Smith or 280 pounds. He can't play at that. You can't play his position, which is totally different than Bruce Smith. You can't play there if you're 280 pounds.
I'm not saying that, John. I'm saying is he needs to be in better shape.
I will say this, observationally only. He seemed to me like he got in pretty good shape over the last 6 weeks.
He seemed.
What does that mean for, you know, July 27th? I don't know.
Who knows? We'll see once he gets back to training camp when they have the conditioning test. As I talked about yesterday, this is a very important time for this team because guys go home and they do what they do. They go on vacations. We all know on vacation. Who eats healthy on vacation? Who really works out on vacation, right? So we'll see when he gets back what he looks like on the field, what he looks like weight-wise and all of that stuff, how dialed in, if he's still in his zen or if he's gotten outside of his zen. We'll see about that. But, you know, he has a lot of time. He's still so young. He has a lot of time to get it together. And he probably has a good, like you said, at least five seasons of where he can be a great, great player in this league.
If he pulls it together.
If he pulls it together year after year.
Yeah. I wouldn't give up on him yet. A lot of people have. And I think some people have a faulty memory when it comes to how good Marcel was for a couple of years, 2013, 2014. He was good, really good, and went to Pro Bowls. And as I said, you know, was a dominant defender, interior defensive lineman. Who's the guy in with the Rams? Aaron Donald?
Aaron Donald, yeah.
He was his equal. He was as dominant as Donald was last year and the year before, perhaps, when Marcel was playing at his peak in 13 and 14. Now, does he get there again? He needs to.
Yeah,
he has to.
We'll see. I think, you know, the best defensive tackles in the game today, You have Aaron Donald. You have probably Ndamukong Suh.
Mm-hmm.
You would have Marcel probably, even though he hasn't played that well, if you just talked, like if you heard national reporters talk about Marcel Darius, I bet you he'd be in top five maybe. Defensive tackles in the game.
Well, based, you know, the last 2 years, though, people.
Yeah.
I think the tendency is to look at the last 2 years and say, well, he's done or he's disinterested. Mm-hmm. But there was that two-year period prior to that when he was at the top of his game.
Right.
I'm betting, hoping, that he
Are
gets
you
back
betting
there. I wouldn't bet on that. But I'm hoping that he gets back to where he was.
I think we're all hoping.
Yeah.
I mean, it's if he gets back to where he was, is so benefit, like it helps this defense in so many different ways. Everybody else will be effective because he's the one that's going to, everybody's going to game plan for him. You can't just slide, we're going to slide protect to Jerry and just leave, you know, Marcel by himself. Like you have to game plan for Marcel on the inside, you know, because the worst thing for a quarterback, and this is the worst thing for most quarterbacks in this league, guys like Tyrod that can get outside the pocket, is different. But for most quarterbacks in this league, the worst thing for them to have is a guy coming up the middle in their face, you know, where they have to slide step side to side. They can't move that fast. They would rather be able to step up in the pocket and make the throws. So if Marcel Darius is at the top of his game, quarterbacks don't want to see him.
Right.
They truly don't. And then for a running back, it's like, man, who's this fat dude that keeps tackling me in the backfield? And that was Marcel Darius a couple of years ago. So hopefully he can get back to that.
Does Darius have what it takes to be one of the top defenders in franchise history? Who are the top defensive players in Bills franchise history? That's the TV show coming up 9 o'clock on Monday on MSG. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. Mike Adamek, the producer of the Bills Top 10 Series, will join us when we return. Brett Smirla is going to join us next hour as well to talk about this issue. You are welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Day from One Bills Drive. Focus on the hockey world, where the first round of the 2017 NHL entry draft is tonight, 7 o'clock in Chicago. You can watch it live on NBCSN or follow it here on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR. The Sabres with the 8th pick, and they're scheduled to make 5 selections tomorrow. 2 second rounders, a third rounder, a fourth rounder, and 1 pick in the 7th and final round. Regular season schedule in the NHL came out yesterday. The Sabres open up the season at home against Montreal on Thursday, October 5th. The NBA draft held last night. Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, and the future of the league arriving. Fultz and Ball led a record-setting run of one-and-dones in the draft. Sixers took Fultz with the number one pick. Lakers followed by taking Lonzo Ball. The point guards from the Pac-12 beginning a run of 7 straight freshmen and 9 of the first 10 selections played just one season of college basketball. To the NFL, the Kansas City Chiefs yesterday were busy. They extended the contract of head coach Andy Reid, but they're in the market for a new general manager after parting ways with John Dorsey. Reid got a 5-year extension, the signing expected. Dorsey's was a surprise. He arrived in Kansas City as general manager 4 years ago. Chiefs chairman and CEO Clark Hunt said he made the decision not to extend Dorsey's contract beyond the season, and that led to the development yesterday where he was let go. The Chiefs described it as a mutual decision, but Adam Schefter of ESPN said the general manager was fired, and no mention made of candidates or the search for John Dorsey's replacement. And the Buffalo Bisons now in a nosedive. They've lost 8 straight games. Last night, a 9th-inning walk-off home run by Syracuse led the Chiefs to beat Buffalo by a score of 7-6. Bisons 1-12 in their last 13 road games. Bisons play again at Syracuse tonight, 7:05 first pitch as they try to snap an 8-game losing streak. And that's the update from One Bills Drive, the sports update on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from our One Buffalo studio. And joining us in studio again, third consecutive Friday, is the Buffalo Bills Director of Media and Content, Mike Adamek, the man behind the series, the Bills Top 10.
Good to be back,
Murph. Two aired already.
Greatest moments in Bills history.
People love the show. I love the show. I've watched the first two.
I hope. I can't tell you the amount of work and hours that we've spent on this, the travel, everything. I mean, I hope that's the point, right? To spark some debate, and hopefully the fans love it.
The debate is on, and it's on our show. People, yeah. We've gotten a lot of content out of this, yeah, which we appreciate, yeah. Mike.
Hey, the content for you guys. That's
content
what
is king.
Yes. Everything is about us. Don't you know? When you guys do shows and stuff, it has to end with us.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's been good to spark content. It's been good to talk about, you know, last week you had the top 10 offensive performers. The week before, top 10 moments. We talked about that. I was here 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
You got the show coming up on Monday night, 9 o'clock on MSG for the top 10 defensive players. We'll get to that in a moment. You get a hiatus week because the night before 4th of July, everybody will be tied up.
July 3rd.
And then two shows left on the 10th and the 17th of July?
10th and the 17th. We'll have the draft diamonds on the 10th. And then the greatest individual performances on the 17th.
Draft diamonds, how do you define that?
Final day of the draft, fourth round picks or later. That's what will pretty much be featured there. So no undrafted guys. I know a lot of people have come to us, like a Booker Edgerson undrafted,
right.
You know,
right.
But not doesn't qualify.
Okay, so those are coming up. But on Monday, it's the top 10 defensive players in franchise history. We've been talking a lot about potential players on the current roster, Mike, who might be a top 10 defensive player at some point down the road.
Yep.
Most people in our Twitter poll is up. About 2/3 of the respondents on Twitter say Kyle Williams. I agree with that. I think given
Absolutely.
His longevity, he's likely to be among the top 10 players, given it his, four Pro Bowl appearances?
Five Pro Bowl appearances.
Yeah. Very popular player. I think he is likely to be a top 10 defensive player in franchise history.
I think if you look at everyone on the current roster, I think by far he's the most likely to make this list. Five-time Pro Bowler. All pro, second team all pro, or first team all pro, I believe once. So he's a slam dunk. Not just what he's done on the field, but what he's meant, you know, in the locker room to his teammates, how he's made players around him better, you know, how he's made Marcel better, how he's made, you know, you go back a couple of years, Jerry and Mario, when they had that huge 53 or 54 sack season, how he's made everybody else around him better.
Talk about Mario.
Yeah. Kyle is he's sort of a touchstone, I think, for many Bills fans. In an era where the Bills have, you know, pretty consistently disappointed mm-hmm. their fans, Kyle Williams is the one guy over, you know, the last 12 years anyway, that people can point to and say, well, he's a guy I can sign on with. You know, he's a guy who I believe is working hard and is playing hard. And you know, it's a cliche. And he came into the league as, you know, fifth-round pick with a high motor. He has exceeded the high motor expectations, right? He's a good player in his own right.
Oh, absolutely. And he's a player that even the Bills, you know, the scouts will tell you, they didn't know what they were getting back then. Because like you said, coming out of college, he was undersized. He didn't have the measurables. But he came in, and they'll tell you, as you'll see in a couple of weeks, he's the same guy now as who he was at LSU. And he's just such a hard worker. And, I mean, he's a player that anybody on this team, whether it's offense or defense, can look up to.
Mike Adamek was with us, the Bills Director of Media Content. He is the lead producer on Top 10 Defensive Players, the latest Top 10 show that will air next Monday on MSG. Our Twitter poll deals with current guys on the roster. We talked about Kyle. We really got hung up the first hour, Mike. And by the way, mm-hmm. you're welcome to join us if you're listening, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. We kind of got hung up on Marcel Darius. Donald, explain, make the case for Marcel Darius possibly being a guy on this list.
You want me to make the case?
I can do it, but I want to make you work a little bit.
Earn that paycheck, Donald.
Yeah,
give
definitely.
It to us.
You know, for me, when Marcel Darius is – now, we all know that he hasn't performed really in the last couple of years, right? He had a couple of years where he was, like, probably the best defensive lineman in the game.
Yeah.
When he – and we're talking about 10 years, 20 years down the line, which is our Twitter poll, who on this current roster could be in this list, right? And so, for me, I say Marcel Darius just based on what he did a couple of years ago. And just talent-wise, I feel like when he's on the field – and he's locked in. He is, you know, if not the best defensive lineman in the game, he's top two or three.
He's right up there.
Defensive tackles.
And
like,
we went to a Pro Bowl.
We were talking about how
a couple, right?
Yeah, we were talking about how Marcel still has a chance to make that impact, right? At age 27, you know, effectively maybe play for another 5 years
mm-hmm.
if he gets turned around, headed in the right direction, which it appears he might be headed in that direction this offseason.
Seems that way.
Yeah, it appears that he's going in the right direction. There's time for him to reclaim his spot, right?
He's still, like you said, he's 27 years old. There's a ton of time left for him. And I think Bills fans are looking at this year as being, let's get Marcel back to where he was a couple years ago when he had double-digit sacks, you know, defense is going to be a little bit more like a Jim Schwartz type, but get after the quarterback. And that's what Marcel wants. And I'm expecting a big year out of Marcel this year.
My thing is, if Marcel for 5 years, starting now, this year, for the next 5 years, can get back to where he was a couple of years ago, he will be talked about as one of the best defensive tackles in the game, if not the best.
Yep.
And if you can do that for a good 5 years in a row, then he'll be talked about in the top two on this list.
Absolutely.
And best defensive players in this franchise's history.
Not going to give any names away, but as I look at the list of top 10 defensive players, the players that made the show on Monday night at 9 o'clock on MSG, every player has played for, it looks like, a minimum of 6 seasons at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say that about Marcel? Has he played
that
6 seasons
say.
At a high level? So, yeah, like to your point, you string together – couple more solid years, get some Pro Bowls in there. Absolutely, you know, down the road, within 5-10 years, he can be considered in top 10.
Talent-wise, he has the talent to do it.
Yeah.
He definitely has the talent to do it, the ability to do it. It's just he hasn't locked in off the field and everything else.
Our Twitter poll deals with which current Bills might have a shot to be top 10, and we've had pretty good response to this so far. Kyle Williams, obviously, 2/3 of the respondents say he has a shot, and Marcel, we just talked about, 18%. I think Jerry Hughes is an interesting name, Mike. 9%, that's all, say he has a shot to possibly win it. But, we saw his great potential again in, 13 and 14, those two seasons, as a sack producer, an edge rusher. A guy who is not old either and has a chance to, but it's all said and done, play another 5 years or so and maybe put his name among the top 10, wouldn't you think?
He's not quite on that Marcel level yet, hasn't gone to a Pro Bowl yet, hasn't received that league-wide recognition, but he's the type of guy, like you said, different defense this year. Let's get back to where we were a couple years ago, that production. He, I believe, double-digit sack season a couple years ago. I mean, the potential's there.
The potential is definitely there for Jerry.
Yeah.
Defensive end is just so hard, man. There's so many – so many edge rushers in this league that are good, But I think if you have Marcel back, he's going to eat up the double teams. And Jerry, if Shaq is what we think Shaq can be, even just off of, half a season last year, you won't be able to just slide protect the Jerry. And Jerry will getting back to this 4-3, Jerry will be able to have free rushes at the quarterback, And if he's playing like the Jerry we know from a couple of years ago, he'll be able to get there.
Let's take some calls on this. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Lines open. Before we get to the calls, Mike, your show on Monday, 9 o'clock MSG, top 10 defensive players in franchise history. Very little drama, I would think, about who's number one, right?
No drama. Okay. No drama. And I think that might even be a track by the announcer in the show. There's very little drama here.
Really?
The debate, our debate's 2 through 10. And each generation, the best part about it is each generation, every fan's going to have their own opinion. The guys that played in the 90s are going to point to Cornelius Bennett and Daryl Talley. And the guys that played in the 80s, 70s are going to look at the Fred Smirlis's types. And the 60s, obviously, they're going to lean towards, their guys, the Tom Sestaks, the great players of those AFL teams. So a lot of debate, maybe more debate than any of the shows, the first two shows that we've had so far. Each generation's going to have their own opinion.
Yeah. And, it goes without saying that Bruce Smith would be the number one defender. And
I think that's a safe, yeah. It's
so he won't even deal with that.
Head to Vegas with that money.
Pat in Niagara Falls has some thoughts on this. Pat, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much. I watch you guys almost on a daily basis as much as I can. And I thank you, Donald Jones, for your services as a Bill. Thank you very much.
Sounds like he's dismissing you now. You're finished now.
Yeah, it sounds like that.
President of your fan club.
Kyle Williams, and as long as Marcel can hang with Kyle Williams, they'll be the best in the business. And as far as in the 60s, Jim Dunaway, Ron McDowell, and Tom Yannick, along with Booker Redgerson. I know Booker Redgerson personally from being a little boy throwing a football in the streets of Oxford Avenue in Buffalo.
Hey, Pat, do you mean to say Tom Yannick or Tom Sestak?
Tom Yannick, yes.
The safety.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's a name that I wouldn't expect. He was a good player, had a huge game against the Jets. Thanks, Pat, for your call. I wouldn't expect him on the top 10 list. But look, Mike, you talk about how the debate is 2 through 10, and it is broken down generationally. It strikes me how, we know the Bills' AFL championship teams of the mid-60s were built on defense.
Absolutely.
Some great defensive players.
Yep.
I could make a list of 10 great defensive players from those teams.
Yeah, and how do you pick? How do you pick a couple from that team? You know, that was the first – we talked to Ed Rakowski. That was the first thing he said. He's, if you look at our AFL teams, we won those because of our defense. Defense was so good back then. Mm-hmm. You know, they went 17 or 19 games without allowing, I think, a rushing touchdown, I believe.
He mentioned, well, a couple of guys up front, and I wonder how much consideration, how much you – the people. What did you do, like 35 interviews you said for the series? Jim Dunaway, very good interior defensive lineman. Did anybody mention him as a great player on those teams?
His name didn't come up. You know, with all that, we talked to five or six or seven interviews from guys that were around the team, the Ed Abramowski, who was the trainer back 1995.
I know you talked to Booker. You talked
to Booker, Al B. Miller, Ed Rakowski, Mike Stratton, and Ray Carlton. Those were the guys we talked to.
We had someone on the show, I can't remember who it was, that said the 2004 defense was the best.
Yesterday.
Better than any of the 90s defenses. And one of the best defenses, what, in the last 30 years?
Yep. He had him among his top defenses in the last 30 years.
I don't know. That 99 defense was pretty good. They were number one in the league, I believe, right?
On the 64-65 Bills, the Pat mentioned Ron McDowell, who was an outside guy, defensive end. You know, made his reputation with the Bills and with Washington. Anybody mention him as one of the top 10 defenders?
Ray Carlton brought him up. He talked very highly of the entire defensive line. You know, just how they really had the best defensive line in the AFL. And again, to the point of that's how they won the championships. He did bring up Ron McDowell's name, Tom Sestak's name. Those guys were definitely brought up and under consideration.
And let me give you – let's get to Sestak for a second because – and I've talked a lot to these old Bills about, you know, the 64-65 Bills. Almost to a man, they mentioned Sestak as sort of a freakish athlete and a guy who was an unstoppable force. I mean, he's got to be on your top 10 list, Mike. Please.
Yes. We'll give that one away. Tom Sestak did make it. Four-time All-Star. He's on the all-time AFL team. And to a man, I believe everybody we talk to says, if Tom was able to stay healthy, Pro Football Hall of Fame to join Billy Shaw as the only players to spend their entire career in the AFL.
And his career cut short by
knee injury. Yeah, he had a bad knee injury that cut the career short.
All right, so Sestak, right? So we got two out of you, Bruce Smith, Tom Sestak. We're going to whittle you down.
Yeah.
What about some of the others from the 60s teams? Mike Stratton is known for having the hit heard around the world. I think it was one of the top moments, right, a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Hit on Keith Lincoln.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it more than that one hit for Mike Stratton, do you think? Or, I mean, is there more to his career that
– I mean, his peers, you know, all the guys we talked to just spoke so highly of him. You know, six-time All-Star. He's, again, a second team All-AFL. And what he meant, that entire linebacking group back then, they played together for – I think they hold the AFL record or Pro Football record for most consecutive games, a starting linebacking unit from the AFL playing together.
Really?
But yeah.
Stratton, who, Harry Jacobs, John Tracy?
John Tracy, yeah. Those were the three.
And I know from talking to Ed Abramowski, and you interviewed him, one of his favorite players, a guy who is a little bit forgotten, I think, was the safety, George Sames, right?
George, running back out of Michigan State. Yeah, and he came here kind of without a position, and was a two-way player at Michigan State, but running back at Michigan State, came here, I think, looking to be a running back. And Lou Saban switched him over to safety and just completely blossomed there. And I asked Ray Carlton about – I think I asked him about Butch Byrd, about the best all-around guy in that secondary. And he said, ooh, I think if we're talking that, I think we need to start with George Sames.
Mm-hmm. What do we do with those two corners, Butch Byrd and Booker Edgerson? The interception totals are high, especially for Byrd. But it was a totally different era when, you know, if you look at Joe Namath's numbers, he threw it up for grabs all the time.
Yeah.
All of them did in that era.
Different
but
era.
What do you do with those corners, Edgerson and Sames, two very fine players?
That's tough. I mean, Booker's got 20-some interceptions. He's on the Wall of Fame. Butch Byrd, 40 interceptions.
Not on the Wall of Fame.
Not on the Wall of Fame. You know, 40 interceptions at the team record, I mean, probably never going to be broken. Probably.
Yeah.
But, I mean, who knows? But Butch, you know, five-time All-Star, all-time, second-team all-time AFL. You know, it's tough. And talk about a debate. Do they both make the list? Does one make the list? And if so, which player is that?
What did you hear when you were talking to their contemporaries?
We talked to Booker, and Booker spoke very highly of Butch Byrd. And, you know, he came in with a little bit of cockiness, but I think, you know, what confident pro athlete doesn't
especially
come in with a little bit of cockiness?
Backs,
but,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Butch Byrd not on the Wall of Fame?
Not on the Wall of Fame. Don't look at me.
Yeah.
We've talked about him in those meetings.
I don't have a vote.
Okay.
I almost have enough gray hair to qualify for a vote.
Because you know why? Because when it came down to Booker Edgerton or Butch Bird, the important people who remember that group in that room said Booker Edgerton was a better player.
Yeah.
I mean, you take their testimony. And the people who were around back then said if you're going to put one of them up, Edgerton goes in before Butch Bird.
And that's a big, you know, we talked about Eddie Romoski, you know, the trainer. He's been was around for 36 seasons.
Yeah.
And he is a big proponent of Booker Edgerton.
Yeah.
You know? But that's one man's opinion.
But, I mean, you know, 40 interceptions kind of speaks for itself, regardless if they're throwing it up.
Regardless of the era, that's, I mean.
I don't know if you can say regardless of the era. It was AFL. It was the 1960s AFL.
It was the Wild West.
It was the Wild West, and people would just throw it into coverage and let happen whatever happened, you know. And the Bills in that era were different.
Yep.
People have said this is not an original thought because the Bills were built on defense. Mm-hmm. Everybody else in the AFL, Sid Gilman's, you know, Chargers teams, everybody else in the AFL wanted to fill the air with football. The Bills, under Lou Saban primarily, played defense and a strong running game. But anybody else from that 60s team that you would think we've hit a lot of them here? We almost have 11.
Exactly. Like you said before, like you can do a top 10 of just the 60 eras. But I think, you know, we pretty much covered them. The Bookers, you know, the Butch Birds, the George Sames, the Sestaks, Stratton. I think those guys would primarily top. If anybody has a chance to make the list, I think you should probably start with those names right there.
I ran into, believe it, this is just a side note, I ran into Harry Jacobs a couple weeks ago, still living in the area, still doing fine,
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Bunch of them still live here.
Yeah, those legends walk among us.
Yes.
It's pretty crazy, but they're here. Anyway, give us a thought. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. All-time Bills defensive players, the top 10. The list will be announced Monday night on Mike's show. Mike Adamek is the producer of the show. The top 10 defensive players, Monday night, 9 o'clock on MSG. Tell us the methodology, Mike. We went through this a couple weeks ago, but who picks these top 10?
Well, first, let me Sam Lack produced the show. He's, you know, a more coordinating producer, but Sam Lack did all the legwork for this show. But no, just to reiterate what, you know, we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, you know, we interviewed 34, 35 guys, traveled over six states, you know, 12 Wall of Famers, seven Hall of Famers, and we tried to span, you know, every generation, the 60s guys, 70s, 80s, and guys today on the team we talked to.
When you travel, you know, did you go to one guy and talk to him about multiple different players?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we had a list. I mean, every interview, I would say, was anywhere from an hour to, I mean, we talked with Marv Levy for about an hour and 45 minutes. You know, each player, we have a list of topics, and, you know, some players, you know, it's going to be a shorter. Joe Cribbs, Sam Lack went down to Alabama to talk to Joe Cribbs, and it was a shorter list, you know, about a half-hour interview. But yeah, I mean, what an experience to be able to meet all these guys, talk to all these guys.
And who makes the list?
Well, players make the list? Oh,
who decides?
Who decides?
Our internal committee gets together. How's that PC answer for you? No, we get together as a group. There's five or six of us get together as a group, and we throw 20 names or 20 moments.
Were there refreshments involved?
No refreshments. There really should have been. Budget's tight this time of year, I think.
So you get just kind of throw it against the wall? And
see what sticks, like half the sports reporters out there.
What about this guy?
But we, you know, put a bunch of 20 names together, 20 moments together, whatever it is, and then from there we kind of whittle it down to 10, and then once we get it down to 10, then
Murph in the discussion to be on the committee? Let's put that out.
You were consulted.
I was consulted. I always felt like you didn't listen when I said things. But
I'll
tell you what, and this is the point. You mentioned to me on our show a couple weeks ago, one of the great parts about the show is that there will be debate.
Yeah.
There will be disagreement. And Mike, I think you've hit the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Your show, the Monday night show this past Monday, top 10 offensive performers.
Yeah.
I wasn't near a TV at the time, but as soon as that show ended, 9:30, I got two different texts from friends of mine that said, "That's ridiculous. How can this be this?" Or how can it? And so it immediately starts debate, which I'm sure next Monday's show will do as well, right?
I think going back to last Sunday, the greatest offensive players, I mean, 1 through 6 were all Pro Football Hall of Famers, right?
Mm-hmm.
The debate on that show beyond who's number one was 7 through 10. You know, those four players were not Pro Football. So who makes the list there? And I think that the debate for that show is where that was. With the defensive players, we've got Bruce number one, no secret. But who's 2 through 10? In what order are they?
You said on the offense the debate was what numbers?
7 through 10,
seven
I would say.
Ten?
Seven
That's
was
it?
Eric Molds.
Because you had all those Pro Football Hall of Famers.
Yeah, 1 through 6, they were all Pro Football Hall of Famers.
Right.
So
now, what about debate in
you know, we know you have six Hall of Famers that are going to be on the list, but should this guy be higher than the next guy?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, yeah. You know, the funny thing was when I was on last week with you and Chris Brown, right? Eric Moles was on right after, mm-hmm. and I loved hearing Eric's opinion. Because, again, he played in a very specific era, and he's going to have his very specific opinion.
Right.
And without prompting, he came up with 1, 2, and 3, which is exactly how he had it.
Yeah.
Jim at number one, Thurman, and then OJ.
And a tweet here from Pops. How about Robert James?
Ooh.
Good safety.
Ooh. He's another guy that I forgot to mention. He was another guy that was talked about, for sure.
And a different era that kind of gets forgotten, pushed aside back in the 70s. Fred Smirlis coming up on the show with us in a couple of minutes, Mike. He played... 70s through the 80s.
Yeah,
I think
79 to 89.
89 was his last year here.
Yeah. You call him the unforgotten Bill, or the forgotten Bill, I should say. Because,
who forgets him?
Well.
You ever meet him?
Yes, I've met him. Murph. I can't wait, Murph.
Who would ever forget Fred? What do you mean?
No,
why
but,
is he forgotten?
Well, five-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
You know, All-Pro, NFL, All-Pro. But he wasn't on those Super Bowl teams.
Right.
So he doesn't get nearly the recognition of, you know, his last year was 89, and then next year, Super Bowl.
Yeah.
First of the four straight Super Bowls. And he just missed that era. And he spanned those early to mid-80s when, let's be honest, the team wasn't very good. They had the back-to-back 2-14 seasons. And
well, they also made the playoffs in 80 and 81.
Yeah, yeah.
Fred was a big part of that.
Sure.
Bermuda Triangle, as somebody pointed out.
Jimmy Haslett, Shane Nelson.
Yeah, people have said that Smirlis kind of revolutionized that position, the 3-4 classic 3-4 two-gap nose tackle. You probably heard that in the interview you did, right?
Oh, absolutely. Dominant nose tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, people loved Fred Smirlis. I might actually listen to his interview when he comes
on. It's coming up in just a couple of minutes.
It's going to be good.
So there's that era. And then, of course, you get to, before you get to the Super Bowl era, mm-hmm. or no, after the Super Bowl era, I should say, Ted Washington's name has come up already
Big
on
Ted.
Our show.
Mm-hmm.
Played essentially the same position as Fred Smirlis.
Yeah.
Giant. Huge man.
Giant, still.
Mountain of a man, Big Ted.
Top 10, you
Big
think?
Ted.
Top 10 worthy?
Absolutely top worthy. You know, he was brought up in discussion. One of the guys we talked to, I won't tell you who, said in his opinion, should he not only make this top 10, but he should be number one of all nose tackles of all time.
Hmm.
I mean.
And that's league-wide?
Yeah. That's a, I mean, bold statement.
Yeah. Sure.
Bold statement alert. You know.
Bold statement alert.
Got a call here from Fred in Rochester. Hello, Fred. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, hi, guys. Great show as usual. I was just thinking of some of these guys, and I remember back, I think it was in the 80s, it might have been the Chuck Knox era, but Bill Simpson, I think he played safety for him, and he was excellent. I don't know if anybody remembers Bill Simpson or not.
I remember him. He didn't play long here, though, did he, Fred?
I don't know whether he played long there or not, but I remember being real impressed with him. Even way back then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what they base it on. I was going to say Smirlis, but you beat me to the punch. So.
Okay,
Freddie was so good.
That's what I mean. And I know today we're talking about our Twitter poll. You know, 10, 20 years out, who would mm-hmm. make a list like this? I just always go back to guys move around so much.
Yep.
You know, and Murph just said he didn't play here long enough.
Simpson 3 years, 80 through 82.
So like in today's NFL, you're going to have a guy who's here for 3 years that might have three great years here and then move on somewhere else and have, you know, five or six great years somewhere else. And it's like, man, should he be top 10 in our franchise history?
Well, I mean, that's the debate with Cookie Gilchrist, right? You went through that last week.
He was here. Yeah, he was here for what, 3 years? He was here for 3 seasons.
Yeah. Now the Super Bowl era. We talked about Bruce. But, you know, that team, K-Gun offense, was sort of known for its offense, but there were some really better than average defensive players on that team.
You could say that.
Including Cornelius Bennett.
Yep.
Shane Conlon, I think, was one of the greats at his position for a while there. On the back end, you know, they had some good players. My buddy Mark Kelso was a very good player back
Absolutely.
There. So how much of the Super Bowl era guys, how many of them are going
to
be in
there? Oh, yeah, they're definitely represented for sure. I'll tell you, Marv Levy, he went out of his way to bring up Mark Kelso's name.
Yeah.
And what a good underrated – I think he called him the most underrated player of any defense that he coached, went out of his way to talk about our buddy Mark Kelso. But no, Cornelius Bennett, Daryl Talley, you know, Bill Polian called Cornelius Bennett the final piece of the Super Bowl defense puzzle. You know, Cornelius Bennett,
a piece that he brought in.
So of course he's gonna defend it. But Cornelius Bennett told us when he got here, he just wanted to beat Daryl Talley.
Yeah, Daryl Talley.
And those guys were obviously close and outstanding players for how many years? Bennett went to 5 Pro Bowls, 2-time Defensive Player of the Year, by the way, and tally a couple Pro Bowls, couple-time All-Pro player as well.
Here's a call from Nick in DePue. Has some thoughts on Bills defenders of that era. Nick, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I really think Nate Odom, definitely our best corner. And then Henry Jones, excellent safety. I don't know if people remember how he led the league in turnovers, I believe, in 91 or 92. And then Nate Odom led the league in turnovers, I think, the year before. And then Thomas Smith, I definitely put him up there, too.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Henry Jones
couple
had
more
a
names.
Long and really good career.
Yeah,
safety.
He did. And this all comes back to how do you get it down to 10?
Yeah.
Because you're talking about your 11 from the 60s and, you know, Nate Odoms and Thomas Smith and Henry Jones you're bringing up now. How do you get it down to 10?
You know who was really a fine player, better than fine, a really good player? Antoine Winfield. Didn't play any winners.
Yeah. Forgot about Antoine.
Ohio State corner.
So not on the list.
Not on the list.
Not if I forgot about him.
You forgot about him.
No, good player.
Yeah.
Good player. First round pick, right? Ohio
yeah,
State.
Ohio
yeah.
State.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marlon talks about him.
Yeah, of course he would.
What does Marlon say?
Isn't he on the
how
show
good
today
he was.
Too?
Marlon? He is on the show.
Oh, Ohio
yeah,
State.
So,
we'll
yeah.
get Marlon's
okay.
thoughts on this, too. Yeah. Hey, Mike, the series continues.
Yeah.
I look forward to Monday night and the next two shows as well. And as you mentioned, you Sam Lack produced
the show, yeah.
And you got the whole crew back there. Everybody's taking
the whole crew
show
back there, yeah. I got the next one coming up, Diamonds in the Draft Diamonds. Let me spit it out. And James Acton's got the last one, Individual Performances.
It's really good, and it's really well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
I look forward to
Thanks,
watching.
Murph. Thanks, Donald.
Thanks for coming by, Mike. We appreciate it.
It's great to be here.
It is the Bills Top 10, and Monday night at 9, it's going to be the Top 10 defensive players in franchise history. You should watch it. You should think about it. You should debate it. You guys will talk about it Monday, right?
We sure will.
On the radio show.
Yeah.
Watch it on Monday night, MSG
you're not
at 9
be here?
O'clock. I will not be here, but I will catch up with the show.
All right.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Adamek, the Director of Media Content for the Bills. Fred Smirlis joining us next. So come on back for that. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Thanks again to Mike Adamek for joining us. His show, Bills Top 10, Top 10 Defenders, coming up Monday night, 9 o'clock on MSG. I love talking about this old stuff. I know.
It's a lot of this stuff I have no clue what you're talking about. But
great debates, you know, and I get it. People want to debate about and we had a great debate going. We can resume that debate, too, about Marcel and where his career is going and whether he someday might be a Top 10 defender.
And this is what happens. Like, we'll get Marlon in. And Marlon's going to name a bunch of guys from his era. Now, he's going to give respect to the guys from the eras before him and maybe the guys, you know, from the era behind him or after him. But you typically pay attention to the guys that played in your era, you know. And so that's why you'll have calls that talk about guys from the 60s and 70s and 80s. And then you have on Twitter, you'll have people talk about the 90s teams and maybe some guys from the 2000s, you know. So it's that's why the debate is so good, and that's why it's so hard for these guys to come down with the top 10.
Yeah.
Because you have so many generations of good football players, great football players, and it's hard to bring it all the way down to 10.
I mean, you got 57 years of Bills franchise here, you know. And so there's no shortage of candidates and the corruption tweets. And how about number 43, Tony Green, 37 career interceptions. That's a great name. Again, you know, Mike talked about Smirlis being the forgotten player. I don't know about that. Guys like Tony Green, Robert James really did play in a forgotten era when the team wasn't winning much and the focus was on O.J. Simpson and the offense during those mid to late 70s. And Tony Green was an outstanding player.
And that
really
was the time when Miami was beating up on
the 70s, right? On a regular and consistent basis. Yeah. Fred Smirlis is going to join us in a couple of minutes here to talk about his role on this top 10 list. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter. Our Twitter poll deals with current Bills, who might be someday top 10 player, a defensive player in franchise history. Pretty overwhelmingly, based on the Twitter vote so far, that Kyle Williams is going to get that consideration. 68% say Kyle, 18% say Marcel Darius. His numbers are climbing, aren't they, a little bit? Jerry Hughes, 9%, 5% say somebody else. Current Bills player who have a chance to be ranked top 10 in franchise history. Brett Smirla is going to be with us here in a moment. I want to switch gears a little bit, Donald. We're about a day and a half, 2 days away from the big contract extension for Derek Carr. The details coming out, $40 million guaranteed right away.
Right. Ooh, so signing bonus.
Yeah.
Dang.
By the time he turns 32, he could earn $125 million. And that's new money, which would be the biggest deal in NFL history.
He's probably going to make all of that, but what's going to happen is, yeah, you get into year three, they're going to restructure his deal and just make it more bonus money. He's going to make a lot. He's going to make a lot of money. He's still so young, you know, and to get this contract, he's going to end up getting another. If he continues to play like he has, he's going to end up getting another contract once they get to Vegas at some point.
Well, here's the thing: the numbers look great, but it's pointed out Dan Graziano from ESPN. He's been on the show. As the details come out, it turns out that all that guaranteed money comes up short of what Andrew Luck is doing. Andrew Luck got $87 million guaranteed.
Ooh.
Derek Carr, what did we say, $40 million guaranteed.
Yeah, so he's pointing out that he's underpaid.
No, just that, you know, that's the way to look at the contract. I don't think anybody would argue that he's underpaid.
He's underpaid, right?
No, nobody's going to say that. We continue on with our discussion about the all-time Buffalo Bills, and joining us, a guy who has a claim to be one of the top defensive players in franchise history, played here with the Bills during some pretty good years in the 70s and through the 80s. Happy to have former Bills nose tackle and good buddy Fred Smirlus on the line with us. Fred, it's me and Donald Jones. How are you, buddy? Good to talk to you.
Ralph, I'm doing okay. I think weather almost interceded. I'm driving up the highway. Should have been 15 minutes ago. It's 50-mile-an-hour winds. Rain's pouring down. Made me feel like I was back home in Buffalo.
Where are you going? Where are you headed, Fred?
I just went down to the pool guy to pick up some chemicals. I came back.
Okay.
So I came back to my office so I could get a landline because I want to make sure I'm loud and clear that no mistakes what I say, Merv. You know how it goes.
In the past, you've been known to have some salty language on our show. So we.
Oh, absolutely. They said, actually, did you ever burn the bridge? I said, I didn't burn it. I nuked it.
Fred, it's good to hear your voice. And we're calling you in relation to this TV show, which airs next Monday on MSG. Top 10 defensive players in franchise history. I have it on good authority that you have a chance to be on that list, Fred. Fred, what do you think of that?
In Bills history?
Bills history, yes, sir.
But anytime you've been out for a while and they recognize you for something you did, it's great. You know, sometimes there's guys who are great that don't get recognized because they've been gone too long or they've been too quiet. So any type of honor I get that includes Buffalo, I'm grateful for whatever it is because it was just a wonderful time getting in fights with you with Haz on the air and rattling cages and all that stuff was great. But on the field stuff with all the guys, Fat Benny, Baby, Shoes, Hotch, Richter, Jonesy. I mean, we just had a phenomenal time, phenomenal people.
Fred, we just had one of the producers of the show on our show, and he was saying how, you know, you played kind of in an era here in Buffalo that's kind of forgotten. Do you ever feel like that when talking about Bills franchise history?
Well, if you go, I get a lot of calls from different people, but just go online and watch. You know what I mean? You watch what I did. I two-gapped, not bragging, but as well as anyone maybe ever, one of the first 300-pound nose tackles, weren't the little 230-pound guys that were off the ball, played guard, started 157 games in a row without getting injured. And then I got injured when I went to San Fran. They traded me for reasons unknown. But anyway, I know why. Chuck Dickinson. Did I say that? So all I have to do is watch the guys I played against, watch what I did. I mean, it's out there in film. I kind of get miffed when a guy like, I don't know, what was his name, but from Seattle went to the Hall of Fame. I'm like,
Cortez Kennedy?
Watch films. My God, please. Anyway, you know what? If the tree falls and no one's there to hear it, plus if people quiet it, it's hard to know that it made a sound.
I just heard you blame Chuck Dickerson for the Bills sending you away for a while. Marv Levy was your boogeyman on that, Fred. What happened?
Eventually, the truth came. And there was Snickers wrappers all over the truth, so we knew it was him. Now, actually, we found out it was him that did that. He was one of the reasons that Ted Cottrell got. Ted Cottrell, the best coach I've ever had, we're very good friends. He said some crap, lied about Ted and lied about me and got us both taken out. And eventually, the truth was found. Me and Marv buried the hatchet without hitting him in the head with it. So that's what it was. And
that's good.
You know, when you think back, you're on your couch eating my baklava, I think back to what would have happened if I was there, you know, what would have happened if Teddy was there, and Chuck Dickerson didn't piss off the Washington Redskins. So he was a cancer cell that they found out and dug it out and brought Ted back, but it was too late for the fat Greek.
Wow. Fred Smirlis on the line with his 5-time Pro Bowl performer for the Bills at nose tackle. I want to get back to what you said, Fred, about you were kind of the first of your kind, right, at nose tackle in terms of size and strength, and a lot of people think you almost invented the position of modern nose tackle. Do you believe that?
Well, actually, when I went to the Pro Bowl, one of the Pro Bowls, one of the defensive linemen, I think it was Johnson from the Eagles, were talking. He goes, well, they send me off films. You know, and Golick told me they send me the films. Because back then, they used to have a smaller guy that would be off the ball and read the center. And I was one of the first guys to come up real tight on the center and try and kill him. And, you know, jam him back so they couldn't get any movement on me. And I could move laterally and use my hands. And so that... Everyone started, if you look, I mean, remember watching Billy Acker. Remember Billy the Pig Acker?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it became my backup. I used to watch film. He had number 76, and every single thing I did, he did. I go, you pig. Well, you've copied everything I did. It's just like, it would be similar to Joe DeLamalia. He changed the way the Law of the Gods played and how they used their hands, you know. So, and it's Stevenson, the way he played with the ball way out, his fake. So it changed, and a lot of guys started playing like that up tight and get your hands on somebody and be able to move laterally, which is very difficult, something you really have to practice. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of people did copy the way I played, and a lot of people, they started putting bigger, stronger, quicker guys on the nose so that 3-4 could run and the linebackers get free. You know, if the linebackers get chopped by the guards, it's my fault, and that's why they want a big nose tackle so the faster, quicker linebackers can run unabated to the tackle.
Hey, Fred, I wonder if there's anybody else on those Bills teams you played with, mostly, you know, late 70s and through the 80s, anybody else you think was just an outstanding player that may be forgotten? I was thinking about, you know, your old running mate there, Haz, who had, what, 6 or 7 years with the Bills. He's gone on to be a successful coach in the league, but he was defensive rookie, and he did play at a pretty high level in the first couple of years.
You know? Didn't get hit much because the Greek guy was there, but I'm going to tell you one guy, you know, I kept him off. There was Keating who played extremely well, and the brain cell traded him. That's Hank Bullock, the man that lives with one brain cell. He traded him to Washington for some crazy reason. But here's one guy, and I remember John Hanna stopped the game when this guy got hurt. He said, this is one of the only kids that could buckle him. It was Shane Nelson.
Yeah.
Shane was a beast, and they tore his knee up and played with it. He was one of the biggest. Lucius Stanford's another guy. There were some great players. You know, now I played with Talley, Madman Telly, and Bennett, and those guys are phenomenal. And Bruce, obviously, the pass rusher. And Art Still was phenomenal. I played with so many great players, but I think Shane Nelson's a guy that really gets unlooked. Look at some of the films. Watch him. You can get him online. He was a stud. Called the defenses out, stone offensive lineman. Did it all, baby.
And those Chuck Knox teams that you were on, those were defensive-oriented teams, weren't they? You guys won primarily because of the defense back then, didn't you?
You know what he did, though, Murph? When I was getting drafted, I was supposed to be a top 10 pick, but there was some controversy about I was uncoachable and a little angry, which is kind of true.
Still angry.
So anyway, I'm on the line with Tampa Bay, and they're going, Chuck Knox is in there, and Tampa, and then, I mean, Buffalo, they're going to draft Greg Roberts. Remember the Outland Trophy winner from Alabama?
Yep.
I beat him with my fingernail. I said, how did that kid be? I don't think he played it. I'm like, God, he must have had someone else's films. But anyway, they're like, we're going to draft you. We didn't have a first-round pick. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to Tampa. I'm going to die. All of a sudden, they come back on and go, Buffalo draft you, and they hang the phone up.
Yeah.
And then Chuck Knott gets on the phone. Now, you know, we're callers where they coaches have suit and ties, and they talk real nice. All of a sudden, he gets on the phone and goes, I heard you're a real mean MF-er. I want you to come up here and get some MF-ing ass. And he's screaming at me. I'm going, yeah, whatever, Chuck, come to it. Don't worry. Okay. And then he brought in, you know, Conrad and Phil. He got Haz. You know, he had all these different players. And then when he went to Seattle, we got Kay Stevenson. It was like, you know, a mannequin smoking. I mean, nothing like Chuck. And he didn't want it. So he brought all us guys in to be Wild Indians, and we were. We played with the band, you know, Mario Clark and all the great players we had with Simpson and Freeman. I mean, it was Fat Betty and Shoot. I mean, it was great. We had tough guys that could play, and he created that whole thing. And they went from, what, 2-10 because it was 12 games back. No, 2-14. right?
Yeah.
It two was, or 12, because there were 12 games. 14 games. Yeah. And they switched to 16 games after. And then when he left, all those pieces were placed to have a wild, crazy team. And Kay Stevenson wanted everyone to have tea together before games. So the dynamic changed. It was a little difficult for a while.
Yeah. Hey, Fred, so you talked about playing alongside Bruce and Bennett and Tally and all those guys. Aside from Bruce, I think everyone here believes that Bruce Smith is, you know, the number one defensive player in franchise history. And aside from yourself, who would, from the teams that you've played on, who would be number two?
Besides myself, because I'm not, you know, I'm not very shy.
Right, exactly. That's why I laid that out there.
I would say, and one of the craziest, the greatest guys on earth, I think the Whacker would be Tally Whacker.
Tally.
Darryl, because he called. And also, let me tell you a side thing. Me and him concocted a way we were going to get Hank Blunk, when he was coaching for Green Bay. I was going to grab his arms. He was going to swing him and kick him and knock him out. But Tally was like, Tally could run. He was unflappable. You know, him and I, if there was something going on, we'd bring the justice, pioneer justice to it. He could play the pass. He was extremely intelligent. You know, Cornelius Bennett was right around there, maybe a tiny bit more athletic than Tally, but Tally just had it all, you know. And there's a lot of great players, like I said, but I think Tally would be the next one.
Hey, Fred, we're talking about you as one of the top 10 defensive players in history, and I think many people know that maybe your signature play, one play that you're most remembered for, was special teams. Bills, Jets, 88 regular season game. You blocked a late game field goal, and the Bills went on to win that game in overtime and win the AFC East that day. It's a little strange that maybe your biggest player, the one you're most remembered for, was on special teams, isn't it?
Well, you know, if you watch, like I said, film, and you see a nose tackle taking up two guys, three guys every play, and linebackers are running free, you don't really notice the fat, hairy guy in the middle of the field pounding the crap out of three guys. You notice a pretty linebacker making the play. So very seldom do we have a chance to break through and shine. He had never missed a kick inside the 40-yard line. What was his name?
Was it Leahy?
Leahy. Yeah. Never missed a kick. So he's inside, I think it's 38-yard line. I said, listen, I said to myself, I pinned the elbow of the center with my left hand and swam him. I said, I'm going to virtually, whenever movement starts at all, I'm going. So if it's offside, it's just 5 more yards. And I hit it just right, came sliding through, got my bent arm up and hit it. And there was, I think they gave it to, they said the house did it, but the house was a little far behind me. Right. So it's just a play that it just happened to hit perfectly because they had very good protection, and the whole place went crazy. And then Scott Norwood, of course, kicked the field goal and brought us back to Promiseville. We were back to, you know, AFC East for the first time in a number of years.
Yeah.
So that was just, it was phenomenal. It was great for the fans, great for all the players. We're hugging and kissing. So it was a combination of everybody.
Hey, Fred, we missed you a couple weeks ago. I understand you had a good reason not to come up for Kelly's tournament. You had a graduation in your family, right? Your son graduated?
I was there, Murph.
I missed you. Were you there Sunday night?
Oh, I'm down to 290 now. You probably couldn't see me. I was standing sideways.
I thought you had a graduation or something.
My son graduated, so what I did for 32 years, this is the 31st year, I had never missed one of these events, and I rode my motorcycle. So the week before, I rode my motorcycle to Buffalo. I left at the hotel, flew back, and after my son's graduation, the next morning I flew in, and they brought me to the golf tournament.
Oh, so you went Monday, okay.
I went Monday, and then drove my bike home. So my streak is still intact. I love Jim Kelly, one of the greatest guys. Not only that, he is the greatest player in Bills history. I don't even think it's – I don't know, Bruce would be number two. But Kelly's the best, and he's – and I'm, you know Kelly. He's a phenomenal guy. He's always been there for everybody else. So whatever I can do to help him – I'm not going to let him down.
I'm sorry I missed you. And congratulations on the graduation.
I missed you too, Murph. I was going to give you a big hug.
I know. I missed that hug. Your family's well, right?
I had to kiss Vic Carucci twice because I didn't get to kiss you.
Family's good, right? Chris is good. Everybody's happy.
Family's good. How's your family? Good?
Everybody's great, Fred. We got to get together sometime. I did miss you a couple weeks ago.
I miss you on the show. You're one of the best announcers in the nation.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I don't have to say it, but you are. I've been with a lot of different guys. They don't hold the candles to you, my brother.
Thanks, Fred.
All right,
stay
Mr.
well.
Jones,
thank
nice
you for being
to
with
you.
Us here today. Thank you.
See you guys.
Okay, bye. Fred Smirlis, the inimitable Fred Smirlis.
Yes.
Have you met him?
No, but I would like to, though.
Yeah, oh, he's the best.
I just want to, like, go out with him one time.
Stream
like,
of consciousness.
Let's just go to a bar or something.
He probably, in the first 5 minutes of the interview, what do you think? He insulted about a half dozen people?
Exactly. Like, and he's doing coaches, it in one players. Sentence so fast.
Yeah. You got to pay attention. Our thanks to Fred Smirlis for joining us on the Subway Fresh Steak Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Back with more in a moment. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy, Donald Jones. We're live at One Bills Drive talking with you about defensive players in Bills history. Just talked to one of the all-time greats, Fred Smirlis, who is likely to be on that list of top 10 players. Want to know from you, on the current Bills roster, who do you think has a chance to be considered someday one of the top 10 defensive players? Call from Jonathan in Alden. Go ahead, Jonathan. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Hey, Donald. I think of the current Bills players, I think Kyle Williams has the most potential. But really, I think they, like a lot of them do, like Darius, and I think they all. I think Sean McDermott's a very, very smart coach. I think he could get this defense back on track. But my question is, how much longer do you think Kyle Williams has left? He's 34 years old. I mean, really depends how long do you think it'll take McDermott to fix the defense?
Well, right. I think it's for Kyle. It's more about making it to the playoffs, and you know, like that's the reason why he's playing right now. He loves the game, yeah, but he wants to win, you know. So if the team wins this year, then he might do it again. If they look like they're kind of coming up now, he might do it again. Once you get to that age, it's not about the money. You do it because you love to play the sport and because you want to win, and I think that's what it's about for Kyle. So I would say he probably this year, depending on how they do this year, he might do it one more year, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, did you take seriously the rumblings that Kyle might not come back this year? I don't think I did. I mean, having talked to him late in the season.
When we talked to him, I did.
You thought he might not come back?
Yeah, I did. I think because there was so much – it was up in the air and so many different things on the table, like Tyrod's contract, the new coaching staff, how it ended last year, you know, under Rex and benching Tyrod. Like, there was so much. And once you're at that age, Kyle's age, it's like, man, I've been to Pro Bowls. I've done so much for this franchise. Do I really want to be around for this stuff? Like, you know, and I felt like.
I guess I didn't take it that seriously.
No, I
didn't. Because he played at a pretty high level again, and I anticipate he will do that again, maybe in a somewhat slightly reduced role.
The hardest thing, though, is when you're a guy who's playing at a high level, you don't want your play to fall off, and only you know your body, right? And it's like, all right, I mean, the franchise, there's everything is kind of on the table right now. We don't know which way the franchise is going or not. Plus, you know, my body, Kyle dealt with some things last year as well. Even though he played most of the season, he dealt with some things last year. And so you're like, do I want to go through that again? You know, do I want to go through that if the franchise, if the team is not winning? And that's what you always come down to. And you don't want for your play to fall off. Like, you don't want your last memory for Bills fans to be like, you were terrible. You know,
no, I get that.
I think, and that's something that athletes deal with. It's so hard to walk away from the game. And so you'll end up seeing guys that just fall off. And it's like, dude, like, and that's really the last thing you remember. Like Tiger Woods right now. You know, obviously we know what happened outside of him playing golf. But people think about him right now just not being that good of a golfer over how good he was when he was at his peak.
So
Roy Jones, all of these guys that go so long.
Kyle would be
long.
Afraid to step away if
I think Kyle would not want for his play to fall off drastically.
Right.
And that be the last memory that people have of him.
Right. I get that. All right. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk with a guy who can weigh in on some of the great defensive players in franchise history. He can also tell us about rookies. Marlon Kerner is the Bills Director of Player Engagement. Just wrapped up about a six-week player a rookie development program with the rookies. We'll talk with Marlon about the elements of that program and what it was like over the last month and a half when we return. Of course, the phone line's open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills.
Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, the focus on hockey later today. The first round of the 2017 NHL entry draft is tonight, 7 o'clock. It all goes down in Chicago. You can hear it on our flagship here in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. The Sabres with the 8th overall pick, and right now scheduled to make 5 selections tomorrow. 2 picks in the second round for the Sabres tomorrow, a 3rd rounder, a 4th rounder, and 1 pick in the 7th and final round. NHL entry draft coming up tonight at 7 o'clock. The regular season schedule was announced yesterday. Sabres open up the season at home against the Montreal Canadiens on Thursday, October 5th. NBA held its draft last night. It was a record-setting run of one-and-dones in the draft. 9 of the first 10 selections in the NBA draft played just one season of college ball. Philadelphia 76ers took Markelle Fultz with the first pick, and the Lakers followed by taking Lonzo Ball. Couple of point guard, freshman point guards from the Pac-12 conference. There was a trade in the first round last night also. The Chicago Bulls traded Jimmy Butler to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Football news, Kansas City Chiefs in the news again with the moves they made yesterday. They extended the contract of head coach Andy Reid, a 5-year deal. That was expected. The unexpected, the Chiefs let go general manager John Dorsey, parting ways with their GM. There's no mention made of a replacement for John Dorsey. Chiefs Chairman and CEO Clark Hunt said he made the decision not to extend Dorsey's contract beyond this upcoming season, and that eventually led to yesterday's dismissal. The Chiefs describe it as a mutual decision, but ESPN says John Dorsey was fired by Kansas City. Bison baseball tonight, they're dealing with an 8-game losing streak, and they play at Syracuse tonight, 7:05 first pitch. The Bisons have lost 12 of their last 13 road games. They've lost 8 in a row, including last night. Well, the Syracuse Chiefs got a 4-hit night from Irving Falu, including a 9th-inning walk-off home run, and the Bisons lost it 7-6. That's the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, joined in studio by the Bills Director of Player Engagement and Alumni, Marlon Kerner. Marlon, good to see you. How you been?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
How's the new job going? A couple months in now, huh?
Yeah, a couple months in. I like kind of getting thrown into the fire, so it was kind of one of those, hey, your first day starting on the job is going to be the first day that the players are back. So, you know, it was a good learning experience. We got to take our time and kind of really figure this thing out and just kind of go and say, hey, on the fly, let's go figure it out. Let's see what we did well. I think, you know, some of the things I think we can do better as a group and a staff is just kind of really explaining more details up front. I think, you know, we kind of take for granted, like we had a kid first time flying by himself.
Really?
Didn't understand that you need to check in 24 hours before your flight leaves, or get to the airport a certain time. And so some of the communication that we sent out maybe have been lacking that because we take that for granted. So really making sure you have everything detailed and spelled out for these guys because, yeah, you know what? I didn't think about it, but, yeah, you know, they probably did all their flying by the team.
Charter,
and then
yeah.
when you have to fly by yourself, you're like, if you're not used to certain things, you don't know when to get there. You don't know. And if you don't – sometimes you're a little afraid to ask, so you just kind of go there hoping to get in.
I always tell people, you fly on those charters, you get spoiled. You don't want to fly any more commercial.
Right.
I don't want to check in an hour before. I don't want to go through security. I don't want to do luggage. You know, you
right.
get spoiled.
You do get spoiled.
I think as fans, we do forget that, you know, these are technically, yeah, they're adults. They're 21, 22, 23 years old, but they are kids. Like a lot of them haven't done things on their own. Even though they've been out in college, they haven't had to do things on their own. And this
definitely.
The first time, and they've also been handed some money. You know, so it's things that they need to learn.
Right, and then all of a sudden you're trying to weed out, like, okay, who can I trust? You know, I've got a lot of family and friends now contacting me saying, hey, congratulations, you got drafted. You know, I need this, I need that. And you're trying to figure out, how do I set up my family and my future family for success, and how do I save money, and how do I not become a statistic? And you hear so many bad things about athletes being taken advantage of, but then you've got financial advisors calling, you've got agents calling, you've got so many people calling you with no clear plan of how to really digest all the information that you've been given. So that was the purpose of having the rookie program. A lot of mandated league topics, really just kind of focusing on a lot of different areas. We talked about some of the rule changes, which as part of the guys told us that probably could have been done a little bit better. The guy we had come in really missed some areas and really was kind of lacking as far as really giving on detail about different from being college to professional ranks.
And not just this year rule changes, but what's different about the NFL?
What's different about the NFL completely as opposed to coming out of college? Some of the things you need to understand some of the things you need to expand, some of the things that you can do legally now that maybe you couldn't do, understanding defenseless position and if you play defense, when you should go high, when you should go low, how to tackle a receiver,
right.
What you're going to get flagged for, some of those things that you take for granted just because we've been watching the game for a while, but those guys are going to now come in and have to play that full speed and understand those rules. And we got to do a better job of making sure we answer the questions and follow up and get the right speakers in here to make sure they can convey those changes.
How in shock when he was going over different rules, even though you said he kind of missed some things, how in shock were they? Like, I can't do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, what?
You mean that's illegal? What? You can't clip guys? There's a clip zone? What do you mean about that? Right. All those things. Like, what? You can't touch a receiver? Like, I do that all the time in college and got away with it. Can't do that now. That's going to be pass interference, and it's going to be a spot foul, not 15 yards. So getting guys really understand some of those rule changes of what you can and can't do. And really, he went over a lot of the rule changes, when you can do a contact out of the pocket, but really missed some of those important ones, the legal clip zone, really helping guys understand, like, you got to come into certain spots. I think that was the biggest thing, really trying to get when you're on special teams, you're going to be a gunner. You got to come in so far and then come back out, or else you're going to line up and they're not going to count you. So that's going to cause a penalty for your team. So kind of getting them to understand some of the rules maybe that they haven't come across yet.
With Marlon Kerner, the Bills director of player engagement and alumni, and the rookie development program was a big part of what you've done for the last, what, 5-6 weeks since the rookies have been in here. What is mandated by the league? What do they insist that you talk to rookies about? What kind of training?
We did a full week of financial training and financial literacy, and I think we can definitely, again, we always look about how can we do it differently. I think we can do a better job of really going back to the basics. And I think, again, talking about when we first started, we take a lot of things for granted, and really going back and saying, okay, this is a routing number. This is your account number. This is how you fill out a check. Because some of those guys haven't had to do that. Some of those guys haven't had to go and open a bank account until they got their signing bonus. And so really trying to understand some of the requirements of what banks are looking for, really what to look for in a financial advisor, because now all of a sudden, you're drafted and you've got guys calling you left and right. Let me represent you. Let me do this. Let me do that. And really, how do you find that out? We had guys come in for, we did a full week of financial literacy. So we had two financial advisors come in, and one of them did a really cool game called Billsopoly, where they had to live as an NFL player. And so the rule was, you get $1 million, and you're going to go around this board, and this board is set up
like a Monopoly
board. And so you roll the plea. We broke up into teams, and you roll the die, and you move your piece, and whatever you landed on, you had to buy. So it was really kind of a cool game.
And
cool,
like cars.
So the first one was, you know what? You didn't land on the house in Orchard Park, but you had to get an apartment in Orchard Park, and it was going to be $30,000 a year. So you start taking that $1 million and just start chopping it down, and then you know what? Unexpected family trip came up, and so you wanted to take your family out, but they look to you to pay for everything because they think you can afford it. So now all of a sudden, that family trip of you and maybe taking your mom or your brother turns into your aunt, uncle, and couple cousins, and now you spent $25,000 on this family vacation because they want you to do it. And then you got to cars. Okay, do you want to spend $50,000 for a car, or are you going to spend $100,000 for a car? So they all opted as a group to take the $50,000. And so you keep going around the board hitting these things. I think we had one pop up. Chance, you had to help out a family member whose house burned down.
Please tell me there was no chance card that said go to jail, go directly to jail.
No, go to jail was see your accountant.
That was. Now,
you played you guys game,
ended, no, but I was in the room when they were playing it.
Okay.
And you guys ended the game, or it was close actually when I left, with taxes.
Yes.
So it was like you're spending all this money. Oh, and by the way, you still got
to
pay taxes.
Got to pay your taxes. And so guys were like, I think guys got to about $870,000. It's like, oh, I got plenty of money. Then, oh, wait a minute. We got to see your accountant, and you're probably going to be about 50% in taxes. What? Okay, so 50% of 870.
New York State?
Oh, yeah, definitely. New York State taxes. Who's that FICA guy? Yeah, so you're going off laughing at those guys. Like, wait a minute. Your 50% taxes off the $1 million you actually started with, not the 870 that you have. What? I got to give you $500,000? Yes, you do. And that wasn't even including agent fees or anything else that might come up. So guys kind of understood that you can blow $1 million really quickly just by buying everything and just going on a whim and not really thinking about, is this expense necessary? Is this something I really need to do?
So there's a financial component. What other components of the rookie development program?
We did also credit that week, and I think that's something that a lot of teams don't really focus on. Mm-hmm. So we found a guy who's gone to about 10 different teams. And his name is Chris Colson, out of Miami. And we really wanted the guys to understand, like, here's credit. Understand what this really means. Understand what this can get you as far as buying power. And if you have a low credit score, how this is going to impact you. Figure out what's on there now so that if you have any issues, you can resolve them now as you go forward. So when you get done playing football, you don't have to worry about saying, okay, I have all this money, but nobody will let me buy a house. I'm going to have to pay all cash. I'm going to have to do all these things. So It kind of helps stymies what you want to do when you get done. It messes up your plan when you get done leaving this game. Then we also brought in somebody from MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. That's one of the mandatory courses. And her story was pretty amazing because she's a local lady here, and she just had death and drug driving violence all around her. Like, just, I mean, I could not understand. She had about 9 people in her life taken due to drunk driving accidents. And some of them was her father at 23 was killed in a drunk driving accident. And then ironically, her son at 23 was also killed in a drunk driving accident on a motorcycle. The driver of the motorcycle was drunk and was doing about 100 into a curve and hit a guardrail. And needless to say, that was not something pretty. But she was very descriptive about what she was talking about with those guys. And I think it really hit home when she told them, you know, I had to go to the morgue and I had to identify my son. And she's like, and it was a closed casket because they told me the way the accident happened, it wasn't going to be open to the public. Right. And she's like, don't ever put your mother to something like that. You know, and I think guys really started understanding when she's like, I had to go identify him. I had to go pick out a plot. I had to do all these things. And knowing I would never see my son ever again at 23. So it hit home to a lot of guys. And they was like, you know, I promise you I won't drink and drive. So, you know, we have a lot of resources and we're going to be there for them to support them in case they do make a decision. If they go out and drink, hey, that's fine. Give me a call. Give Laura Young a call. You can call and take a taxi. We're going to get Uber now. We have options so that you don't become a statistic and end up on the news.
Now, all of these programs that you guys are doing, they were always done. But the rookies used to have a week where they went out to the Hall of Fame. The league doesn't do that anymore. So why is that?
You know, because I think before it used to be more the draft picks were the ones who used to go out and do certain things, and then they took it to the teams. And some of the teams so far. So it's kind of hard to say, you know, I'm going to expect you, if you're on the West Coast, you've got to take your entire rookie class, fly them out, and take them out to the Hall of Fame. So they kind of left it up to the teams to kind of decide how should you do this. And then they actually used to do it last week. Last year was 2 weeks. You had to go and just take everything, combine it with all these topics in 2 weeks. And they said, you know, got the feedback from teams and just said, you know, this is a long time. I mean, the rookies got here right after rookie mini camp and they stayed and they hadn't gone home yet. Right. And to keep them for all this time is not beneficial. So we had the choice to kind of break it down and we could either do 2 weeks or do it over the course of the practice. And we elected to do it over the course of why they were here, an hour a day. And then that gave them time to kind of get those topics in and really acclimate them to what they were really getting into, because it's a lot to just try to take guys and say, you're playing football. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to make you sit up here and stay here for 2 or 3 hours and sit and learn some of these courses and watch this and expect you to be attentive. So we kind of broke it down and tried to space it so that when they were kind of ramping up, we kind of backed it down. And then when they had some quiet lulls, we ramped it up and got some stuff in there. So financial week for us was perfect because there was no veterans here. Mm-hmm. It was just all rookies. And we got to bring those guys in and really just talk to them and get their questions answered. And every one of those sessions went longer than we had scheduled for them.
With Marlon Kerner, the Bills Director of Player Engagement, who just wrapped up their rookie development program the other day. Hey, Marlon, what about dealing with media and social media in particular?
We did that as well. So those are mandatory topics. So we had media training come in. We had Jerry Madelon come and talk to our rookie class. And then we actually had Anna and Jerry present a presentation to our rookies about social media and really getting them to understand that you can do so much good and creating a brand if you understand how to use social media and use it the right way. You can also undo everything that you're trying to create and make yourself look bad. You can not represent the organization in the best light by doing an ill-timed tweet or photo from Instagram. So really trying to get those guys to understand them. And Anna did an amazing job because she actually went in and found tweets from guys that they knew. And guys that had made mistakes, and I won't say some of those tweets, but they were pretty interesting that you wouldn't even think that guys who were going to be number one over, like,
I've seen them.
Some of those tweets, yeah.
I've seen guys get drafted, and 10 minutes later, their tweets from when this kid was in college talking about, like, somebody on their team.
Right.
And it's like, yo.
Or saying some things that you shouldn't say. Like, one guy was like, you know, these two girls want to do this, this, and this. And I'm like, but he was going to be a first-round draft pick. And I'm like, wow, like, you would think that someone would tell him, don't say anything like that on Twitter, but he put it out there, and getting to really understand, like, once it's out there, it's out there. It's never going to leave. It's not going to disappear. You can't make it go away. It'll be there 10 years later, 20 years later. Your kids could Google your name, and they would find that information about you. So making them understand that you have an opportunity to make a crazy amount of money in a short time, but also you can help create your brand for when you get done playing and give yourself many opportunities once this game ends for all of us.
You came into the league, what, 23 years ago?
Yes, sir.
Draft pick, 1994 of the Bills. How have players changed in those 23 years? How are these group, this group that you dealt with over the last few weeks, different than the group that you came in with in 1994?
You know, I think
social media
was one of the biggest changes. You know, just understanding that I came from Ohio State, and so I think the first thing that I had, Ohio State made us go to a class. So the first thing that I said to those guys was, understand that your life is no longer your own. And that's what I was told the moment I stepped on campus, mandatory class at Ohio State, you're going to live life in a fishbowl. And they're like, what is that? I'm like, so, you know, imagine taking a goldfish, looking at it. You can see that goldfish from every angle. You can hold the bowl, see it from the bottom, from the top, every side angle, you can see it. That's you. You're the fish. Your life is the bowl. Your neighbor's going to watch you. This little kid who looks up to you is going to watch you. The media sees you. You go on Twitter and say anything, the world can see you. So understand you have to be very careful in crafting your brain and what you say, because you can undo all the good that you're trying to do and build for yourself. So got them to understand that day one. And then I just think that guys are kind of, there's a lot more done for guys now. You know, universities kind of spoil kids. They kind of get some treatment that maybe everyone else in the world doesn't get. And so kind of when they get here, they don't always know as much as we had to understand. Like, you know, guys like, hey, I need to get an apartment. Well, what do I do? Well, they're going to come to us like, and I have no problem helping. I'll show you everything to do. But we kind of were a little bit more self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. Like, we were able to kind of go do things and kind of get ready to do things on our own because it was expected. Like, you know, and so I think some guys thought, well, you know, hey, I'm here. You're supposed to come pick me up. Or, hey, I need a ride to the airport. Like, wait a minute. I'll give you a ride to the airport. Not a problem. But you need to figure out how you're going to get yourself home, because now you're in the NFL and you're not just going to get a ride. Like, that's right. Not the team's responsibility to drive you back and forth. So right. Once we kind of got them to understand that they're now adults, and this is their job, and they're no longer on scholarship, so there's no more free lunch. They kind of started to get it.
Sure. You know, Don and I were talking over the last week or so. We've had a lot of draft picks on the show, Zay Jones and Tre'Davious and Deion Dawkins and Nathan Peterman yesterday. It's hard to generalize. But as a group, these guys seem, I would say, unusually bright and focused and, I don't know how to describe it, polished almost, you know, all of them. All of the rookies I've talked to so far this year seem like they've got a lot on the ball.
You're right. I think this is a great class. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better class if this is your first time starting as the director of player engagement, because these guys were hungry. They were attentive. They were eager to learn. They listened. They took direction well. Most of those guys all graduated, so we didn't have to worry about, like, what is your plan? They all had questions about what they wanted to do. They all were just really a good group of guys to kind of start with and say, okay, no problems. And I think that was a product of them all being in school for 4 years.
Yeah.
Nobody really came out early. So, you know, their maturity level was at a different state than maybe somebody who came in and went to school and maybe graduated 17, mm-hmm. came in and played and was out, and now they're 20 years old, as opposed to these guys are like 22, 23 years old. And just a great group of guys to be around. I mean, it was amazing just to kind of get to know them on an individual basis and kind of just talk to them and see where their heads were. Understand it, and they all were just like, you know, I don't want to end up like some of the guys that I read about. Like, how can I do this? What should I do here? You know, and we were able to sit down and just talk it out.
Marlon, in your role as the team's director of player engagement, you were kind of at the forefront of a pretty wide array of programs that are available to all players, not just rookies.
Right.
Maybe that didn't exist when you played, but people need to know that these players are not here on their own. And yeah, some might get in trouble, some might fall by the wayside, some might not have much of an NFL career, but there's support in place, both
right.
here and around the NFL, for any issue that these guys could encounter, I would think. Huh?
There's support everywhere, and really I think that was the main thing of one of our courses was just kind of, here's all the resources you have available to you. And the NFLPA came out and talked about their resources, their benefits, the options that they have available to them. And then we just wanted to make sure that no matter what, you know, hey, you can give me a call for anything. You can talk to me. You can talk to Lynn, our team chaplain, one of our members of our support group, Laura Young. You can talk to any one of us. If you can call us day or night, if you have an issue. So they did. They called us. They tested us a little bit from time to time. Mm-hmm. But nothing major where you're just like, oh, my gosh, like, stay where you are. I'll be right on my way. It was more of a, hey, how do I get rid of this? Or how do I get here? Or what about this? Or what about that? So those group of guys were there. But you're right. I mean, there's resources, there's stuff available to guys. And, you know, some guys are going to listen. You're going to get those guys who feel like they're entitled to something and that, and then they understand this is a business. So I think we try to be strategic in bringing in speakers to kind of talk to them about what they should expect in this business. And we end it with my man to the right here, Donald Jones, kind of giving them the insight on what they should expect and what they should be doing to get ready for training camp.
How do you, or because you have the rookies and they have to do these classes or whatever, and then once next year they won't have any classes.
Right.
Or anything. So how do you carry this on to the veterans? Because once you're a veteran, like, you know there are some resources, but you don't know. Like, guys still will say, man, like, I didn't know the league does that, you know? So how do you maybe push it so where they can make it not necessarily mandatory, but at least get these guys to understand after they're rookies the resources that they have?
I think you just really just stay on top of the guys that you have. You know, this is my first class, and the first advice that I was given was take care of your rookie class now, because they're going to be the ones that go and talk to the team as they become veterans. So their second year, they're going to tell, yo, listen to Marlon, listen to Laura. They know what they're talking about. They're really here to help you and really give you some good advice and give you wisdom. And then we just try to make sure we have that dialogue. So really just trying to make sure, like any other job, you know, having that banking experience that I was able to call upon and say, okay, you know what? One of the things we had was a book of business. And so you kind of have to treat the guys like a book of business. You work it. You have to call them. You have to touch base with them. You have to go and talk to them and get to know them, not just on a football level. Like, hey, what are your goals? What are your plans? Like, how's your son? How's your son doing? How's your daughter doing? How's your wife doing? You know, hey, you know, what can we do to help you? What else are you looking to do? Hey, what else are you doing when you get done? Like, all right, season's over. Now what do you got planned? I'm going to go back to school. Hey, do you know the league also has these benefits? For, oh, I didn't know that. Let's talk a little bit. Let's come in here in my office and do that. And so really just trying to make sure you touch base with guys. Like, you can't talk to guys at the beginning of the season and then let all that time go by and then wait till they're about to go and say, okay, anybody got questions for me? Because they don't know you. So if they don't know you, they're not going to relate and open up and share anything. And so you really can't guide them as they hear through their career. And then really what we want to do and what I loved about Sean's vision was it's not just about taking care of current players. It's we want to guide them through the entire process. So really taking that department and saying, okay, you know what, you're a current player, but we're all going to be alumni one day. So, you know, making sure that we all can go through that process, because some guys want to take advantage of it now. Some guys inevitably are going to wait until they're done and say, now what do I do? But at least now they have the same person that they can contact and say, okay, Marlon, I'm done playing. I played 8 seasons. I want to do this, this, and that. How can you help me? And we have the resources available for them for that, too.
Marlon Kerner is the Bills Director of Player Engagement and Alumni. Before we let you go, I know you're chomping at the bit to get in on our kind of debate all day, the top defensive players in franchise history. You played here several years. You had some guys you played. You played with the tail end of the Super Bowl crew, right? Bruce Smith and Cornelius Bennett. Obviously, they're going to be on that list. Anybody else that you played with that you think merits some consideration?
You know, I loved playing with Ted Washington. Mm-hmm. I think he was one of the best nose tackles in this game. I mean, big, 6'6". They listed him at 330, which we know that means he was bigger than that. But he was a man-child, and you cannot move him. I mean, he was just an athletic big man, quick off the ball, and so strong and physical. And I loved being on the back end of it, because when you would see run plays diagnosed, he would just swallow up two guys. Like, the nose tackle and the guard couldn't budge him. And so it made Bruce's job easier. And then also adding a guy in that list would be Bryce Pop, because Bryce Pop was a benefactor of the fact that we had Ted Washington in the middle. So when we blitzed, I mean, you had to go and figure out who you're going to stop. And Bryce led the league that year in 17 and a half sacks. It was NFL MVP that season, in that 1995 season. So those are two guys that I know that I played with as well. Cornelius Bennett, amazing player. Obviously, Bruce Smith is definitely going to be on that list.
Sure.
You know, if you talk about secondary, I think Antoine Winfield, and not just because he was from Ohio State. I'm sorry, the Ohio
State
University.
Did you hear us talking about that earlier? We knew you
not.
Would bring that up.
Yeah. You got to have a Buckeye on this list. I mean, you got to have one Buckeye on this list.
Here's a Buckeye for you. Did you play with Spielman?
I did play with Spielman here. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he was
good.
Here too. He was pretty good too.
Yeah. That show's coming up Monday night. Marlon, thank you for this. Congratulations on completing your work with the rookies. Right?
Thank you. Yes.
You probably feel like your work is never done, as you said.
It's never done. Yeah. They have 5 weeks, and I'm already like, all right, give me what your goals are. I make copies of everything, and I'm like, and when you come back, the first thing we want to ask you is, did you hit all these goals on this list that you gave me? And so if they didn't, I want to know why.
All right. tough. They got a homework assignment.
That's right.
From Marlon Kerner. Marlon is the Bills Director of Player Engagement and Alumni, talking to us about the rookie development program that just wrapped up yesterday here at One Bills Drive. Donald and I back with fake news and real news when we return the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Working our way up to the 3 o'clock hour, the top of the show. We had a good discussion. Marlon added to it also about the all-time defenders in franchise history.
Yeah, the all-time defenders in franchise history. We went out in the other room as we got off air, and he was just saying how hard it is because you have guys from all of these different eras, you know, and it's hard to bring it down to a top 10 without, like, serious debate. But I think that's why you do things like this, because there are going to be guys on the list, and people are like, no way. Like, so-and-so has to be on the list. How could you not put him on the list? Right. And that's what makes
it interesting. Or why would you rank him ahead of somebody else?
Exactly.
And I said to Mike Adamek in the 1 o'clock hour, that's what the calls I was getting Monday night, having not even seen the show Monday night. I've since seen it about the offensive players. People are saying, what? How can this guy be ahead of that guy? Well, that's the great thing about the show. The show airs Monday night on MSG. Top 10 defensive players in franchise history. We're Monday night, 9 o'clock on MSG. It'll be repeated, I'm sure, throughout the week. We're kind of getting into a discussion here today. We've had it ongoing for the last 2.5 hours. Of which current defensive players on the Buffalo roster have a chance to be ranked top 10 in team history? That's our Twitter poll, and there's just about 25, 30 minutes left in our Twitter poll. Ton of votes on this one, more than 2,500 votes. Which Bills current player has a chance to be ranked top 10 in team history? Overwhelmingly, pretty much everybody, well, more than two-thirds of you think that it's going to be Kyle Williams. He's got 68% of the votes in our Twitter poll. Kyle Williams, 68%. Marcel Darius, who's been kind of a flashpoint for a discussion on this, because everybody sees his potential. Everybody knows that he's failed to live up to his potential in the last couple of years, but he has a chance to turn it around, and maybe he can be a top 10 defensive player in team history. 18% say that. 9% say Jerry Hughes. 5% say somebody else. Let us know what you think on the telephone line, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Maybe we're missing somebody. Maybe there is somebody else that is in that other category. The debate could be Marcel Darius. What are the chances that he gets on that list? You know what I mean? Is it a better than 50-50 proposition that Marcel Darius? I mean, who knows, right? We're being speculative here.
Yeah, because
I wouldn't know how I would answer that. I hope for it. I root for him.
Marcel Darius can be on this list if he wants to be on this list. You know, and not all – I mean, look, everybody here that plays in the NFL, everybody's good. But there is a certain – there's a select percentage of players that play in this league that are elite. And Marcel Darius is an elite player if he wants to be an elite player. Everybody can't say that. Like, you can – you know, some guys can be solid players in this league, you know, and a good player, but – not everybody has the ability to be an elite player in this league, you know. And Marcel Darius can truly take over games and take over seasons. Now, when I say take over a game, that doesn't mean that he's, you know, creating all types of sacks and stuff like that. Marlon talked about, you know, Ted Washington and how he – like the first thing he said was how he just would eat up double teams. You could not move him. And other guys would benefit because you could not move that guy. That is Marcel Darius. But he also has the quickness to actually get in the backfield and get some sacks for himself and make plays in the backfield, you know. So Marcel Darius has that ability if he wants to.
That's the big question. That's we don't the have the question. Answer to that. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can weigh in on our Twitter poll or weigh in via Twitter. Right now, though, it is time for Fake News, Real News, our regular daily feature. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese, fake or real. How about this one? Gil Brandt, widely respected senior analyst, NFL.com, has a list of the top running backs all time in the NFL. He's got Ezekiel Elliott, after 1 year with the Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott on his list of top 30. He's got him 27th all time.
Who's behind?
I don't have the list in front of me. Ezekiel Elliott, one of the top 30 running backs in NFL history after one season. I say fake. I mean, I know we're in the silly season in NFL offseason news. There's not a whole lot going on. But do we really have to rush to, as Bill Parcells would say, you know, put a bust in Canton, Ohio already? Ezekiel Elliott one season, and he's already one of the top 30 running backs in history? Absolutely fake. Donald?
I'm going to go fake on this, and I think it really is disrespectful for guys that played a long time in this league and guys that have really, really produced for years in this league who should be ahead of him. You know, for you to put a guy who had one good season ahead of the rest of those guys that have played in this league, that's just not good. So I'm going to go fake on this one. There's no way he can be top 30 in NFL history after one season. Anytime you talk about the history of the league, you have to – everybody says you got to play a certain amount of years to be top whatever in the history of the league. So
come on.
He's had a good season. But
one season.
Yeah.
Gil Brandt made this list. He's got Jim Brown number one, Walter Payton number two, O.J. Simpson number three, Thurman Thomas 17, and Ezekiel Elliott 27. Ezekiel Elliott does not belong yet in the conversation with that group. Sorry, he doesn't. Fake.
Not at all.
Totally fake. Fake, fake, fake. Here's one for you. Dave Gettleman, our good buddy, who's the general manager of the Carolina Panthers, feeling pretty good about his team's chances this year. Dave Gettleman, in an interview on the Panthers' website, said, last year we were tired. I think guys got carried away. I've seen a Super Bowl hangover, and after you lose it, it ain't pretty. But Gettleman says there's a different attitude again this year. I feel this is 2015 all over again. So will the Panthers rebound and win the NFC again? Fake, real? I say fake. I think there's too much good competition, number one. And I don't know if they can recapture kind of the magic they had in 2015. That's hard to do. They have had some losses. I mean, their defensive coordinator is up here now for one.
Right.
I'd say Cam Newton had a great year two years ago now. Can he get that back? Luke Kuechly, what's his status? He's had some concussion issues in this nine games over the last two seasons. I think that's fake. I don't think the Panthers are – certainly I don't think they're the favorites to win the NFC, not nearly the favorites. So I'm going fake on this.
I'm
going
to go fake. I don't even think they're favorites to win the NFC South. You have Atlanta and Tampa.
Atlanta, yeah.
You know, Tampa is a team that – don't sleep on that team. With that quarterback, DeSean Jackson, Mike Evans, O.J. Howard, they have some weapons on offense. Don't sleep on that team. They're not even a favorite to win the South, so fake.
We both got fake. Finally, fake and real. John Dorsey fired yesterday by the Kansas City Chiefs. Is that a shock to part ways with the general manager yesterday in mid-June? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's real. John Dorsey's firing was a shock to me. I heard it when I got out of here yesterday. Yeah, it's a shock. I'm not quite sure what happened there. It looks like some sort of a contract dispute with Clark Hunt. But come on, now as much as people scratch their head about Doug Whaley getting fired right after the draft, this one is even more befuddling, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to go real on this one. That was a total shock to see that. How could you fire a guy now? It just doesn't make sense.
The guy's had
success, too. Yeah, he's had – I mean, the team was good last year. Yeah. The team was good last year, and so that was definitely a shock to me, so I'm going to go real on that one.
We got that real. Firing John Dorsey, definitely a shock for the Kansas City.
They won the division. Didn't they go to the AFC Championship? Did they go to the – they were in the playoffs. I can't remember if they went to the AFC Championship or not.
That's a good team there in Kansas City. That was a shock. We're going to break. Going to get back in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security, home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned from our guests today? We had a couple of good ones today. We really did. Fred Smirlus joined us, the former Bills nose tackle. He is likely to wind up on that list of top 10 defensive players all time in franchise history. Smirlus talked about Daryl Talley and Bruce Smith, a couple of teammates who he thinks belong in that category as well.
Talley could run. He was unflappable. You know, him and I, if there was something going on, we'd bring the justice, pioneer justice to it. He could play the pass. He was extremely intelligent. You know, Cornelius Bennett was right around there, maybe a tiny bit more athletic than Talley, but Talley was... Talley just had it all, and there's a lot of great players, like I said, but I think Talley would be the next one.
Fred Smirlus talking about Daryl Talley as far as one of the great all-time defenders in Bills history. Marlon Kerner just joined us, the Bills Director of Player Engagement and Alumni. Just wrapped up the rookie development program here yesterday for Bills rookies, and he talked about how he is here to support Bills players, rookies, and veterans.
We just wanted to make sure that no matter what, you know, hey, you can give me a call for anything. You can talk to me. You can talk to Lynn, our team chaplain, one of our members of our support group, Laura Young. You can talk to any one of us. If you can call us day or night.
Marlon Kerner talking about his role. Our Twitter poll today dealt with what Fred was talking about, the all-time defensive players in franchise history. Part of the show that's going to be on TV on MSG Monday night, 9 o'clock, the Bills' top 10 defensive players to be announced, part of our Bills Top 10 series. We talked with Mike Adamek about that earlier on. And we came to you on Twitter and on the telephone today and asked you which current Bills defensive players might someday be on that list. Top 10 defensive players in franchise history. Our Twitter poll pretty overwhelmingly goes in favor of Kyle Williams. About more than two-thirds of you, 68%, say Kyle has a chance to be ranked top 10 in team history. I would agree with that. 18% say Marcell Dareus. 9% say Jerry Hughes. 5% say somebody else. Dareus is going to be interesting to watch. I was going to say fun, but it might not be fun if he does, if things don't get.
It won't be fun if he doesn't
things don't get
it
turned around for him.
It will be interesting to watch, though, because if he does get it turned around this year, it's going to be fun, and then the year after that, we'll see if he can continue to do that. You know, and he's going to be topic of debate moving forward, especially if he doesn't get it turned around.
Yeah, people will be. As I said, he's the one guy. I think I said it yesterday when we went through who you're going to watch most closely when training camp opens. He's my guy.
He's one of them.
He's
yeah,
the key guy for me as far as how the season turns out. I haven't written him off. Sounds like some of you have, some of the listeners and callers today. I haven't closed the book on Marcell Dareus for two reasons. Number one, he is extraordinarily talented when he's ready to play. Mm-hmm. Number two, I think he has a good heart. I think he's a pretty good guy, and I root for people like that to fix things and get better and hopefully contribute to wins in this roster.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Obviously, I know him personally. I'm cool with him. We talk on a regular basis, and I talk to him about different things like this and how he needs to get it together because, you know, not only are the fans here rooting for him and everybody, but his family at home, you know, and the people that love him that are closest to him want him to be successful.
Hey, Donald, you got the helm here for a couple of weeks. I'll be back in a couple of weeks, though.
Jeez. All right. I guess I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Chris Brown will be hosting with Donald coming up next week. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Intercom board up today is Derek Kramer. Production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Ryan Dukarm, our producer, Jay Harris. Donald will be back Monday at noon with Chris Brown. So tune in then. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.